Evanston librarian Betsy Bird, and our Wednesday sketch comedy and improv hour, Character Flaws. Now here's your host, a man who suspended his campaign for president, Justin Kaufman.
Suspended, because I may pick it up. You never know. Suspended till I can tell everyone they're not getting paid. Suspended because, come on, everybody loves me. Please love me. I always love when politicians, I'm suspending my campaign. That's because you have a lot of vendors yet to pay, right? That's what that is. There's nothing else. Or are they really thinking, I've suspended my campaign until somebody just goes, no, 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 no. And the masses and the throngs of people just getting big. We want Fiorini, Fiorini. And then she's back. Probably not. I don't think that's ever happened, but it could. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN Radio. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. We have an amazing show lined up tonight. I'm so excited for my guest tonight at the big table, Kelly Hogan. And Kelly's a tremendous singer. She's a mainstay here in town. She sings with just about everyone. She's collaborated with Mavis Staples, the Decemberists. I just saw her in Conan with Iron and Wine. Not to mention her own Chicago bands. We'll talk about her life in Chicago music and her upcoming show at the Hideout on Valentine's Day. Big day in Springfield today as the president came home. But closer to Chicago, aldermen vote for an inspector general, and it doesn't go through. Principals got their marching orders on budget cuts, and everybody's getting ready for the March 15th primary here in the state of Illinois. Mike Fouché will be here for our weekly check-in. Also tonight, we welcome back our resident we should call her a resident librarian, right? We need a resident librarian here on the download. And since she's been on before, we're just going to let we're just going to call Evanston Public Library Betsy Bird our resident librarian here on the download. She'll join us to talk about how to develop a new generation of readers. It's becoming harder and harder because of our bite-sized technology. And if you have a child anywhere between the ages of 4 and 10 at this point, I mean, it's reading might as well just be called Minecraft. That's what it is. But it's harder and harder, and the schools are doing a great job of making sure that there's book reports and books are being read. But what makes a great book to develop a young reader, especially at 7 years old, 8 years old? We're going to talk to Betsy Bird about that. Not only, you know, works at the Evanston Public Library, but before that did wonders with the children's collection at the New York Public Library. So we'll talk with her coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Also tonight, it's Wednesday, so it's time for another installment of Character Flaws. This is our hour where we bring you the best sketch comedy, improv, characters, and performance that Chicago has to offer. Great talent with us tonight. Abby McEnany is going to be here, TJ Shanoff, and Sandy Marshall. Sandy, who does a lot of stuff for the download, is actually in studio tonight. We'll do some live stuff. So that's coming up. All that plus news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon, and production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, let's get things kicked off. Let's do the carry out, of course, our nightly segment where I read the newspaper. So you at home, you don't have to. Here's today's top stories. President Obama was in Springfield today because, I don't know, Air Force One needed gas and he was dying for Culver's. But there he was. The speech had all the feelings of a stand-up comic trying out new material at the local club. Like, we're going to hear the same speech in 3 months at a Washington, D.C. state dinner. It was great, though, right? I mean, he's such an eloquent speaker. Say what you will about his politics, but there are rare moments when politicians talk with such civility. Will it work in Springfield? Oh, God, no. No. Never. But it was a great speech. While President Obama snuggled up at a roadside motel in Springfield, the Supreme Court blocked the climate change executive action that he put forward. So time to stock up on that coal while you can. Hey, you know what we're going to do as a country? We're going to band together and we're going to win the race to destroy the planet. USA! USA! This is when we hit the Bruce Springsteen. Fall down and hold up down. I don't know the lyrics. The New Hampshire primary's over. Trump, Sanders, Clinton, Kasich. All right. Boy, those guys love the spotlight, huh? Those speeches were so long. And the supporters in the background, so fake. And the CNN graphics, so dumb.
Now on to Nevada next Saturday, where two others will win and will realize that nobody that's running for president is going to be president. If you're keeping score, and really, nobody is, Chris Christie and Carly Fiorina both suspended their campaigns today, but Ben Carson, he stays in the race, confident that he will win South Carolina. What can you say? He's a surgeon. You got to be sure. Also, I'm glad you're voting for Trump. You know, you love a winner. He wins. He wins at business. He wins at TV. He wins at politics. But I hate to sound like that one effeminate dad at the Little League game, but winning isn't everything. Bill Belichick wins. Coldplay wins. Kung Fu Pandas won 2 weeks in a row. But do I want them to be my next president? Well, maybe Kung Fu Panda. All right, let's move on from politics. A Florida man was arrested for throwing an alligator through a drive-through window. When asked for comment, the man said, "Hey, I wanted Dr. Pepper and they gave me Mr. Pibb. What else am I supposed to do? Trump!" He thought that story was weird. How about this one? Chicago area drivers may see gas prices coming in under a dollar. That's right, 99 cents a gallon could be a reality because of stockpiling reserves. But something tells me that the gas stations off the Kennedy, they're still going to charge you $3.50. Hey, it's the Chicago way. Facebook is being accused of privacy breaches by the French. Yeah, they're upset that Facebook is using private data and tracking non-Facebook users on the internet. What? So wait, Facebook's collecting data on non-users? I'm telling you, man, either Facebook's trying to take over the world or it's just running for president in 2020. Either way, we got a... Ooh, new emojis. Cool. I love Facebook. Have you been paying attention to the Ghostface Killah Martin Shkreli feud on the internet? All right, let me explain the Ghostface Killah Martin Shkreli feud to the WGN radio audience. Okay. So Ghostface Killah, he's a rapper and he's part of Wu-Tang, which is a group of rappers from Staten Island. And they put out a record that nobody heard. They just put it out and nobody heard it. And Martin Shkreli, he's the dude who jacked up the price on the AIDS drug. Remember that? And then he went to jail for insider trading. You know, he's the guy who looks like the guy who was Capone's friend, who Kevin Costner threw off the roof in Untouchables. Remember that? Your buddy, he died like stuck like an Irish pig. That guy. He kind of looks just like that guy, but younger. Anyway, for some reason, that guy bought the record for millions of dollars, which I didn't know you could do. And now Ghostface Killah wants it released, so Ghostface Killah and Martin Shkreli are just using YouTube videos to diss each other. He'll say, "Put the record down." The other guy say, "Hey, Ghostface, you suck." And then the other guy says, "Put the record down." Go, go. Sorry, just got brain freeze from all the stupid... Understand now? We good? We good. In weather, it's so cold, I'm thinking about putting a towel against the bottom of the door. That's cold. In sports, Coach Q goes all Cam Newton and walks away from a post-game presser last night after the Hawks had another goal waved off. Two games in a row. Hawks lost, but asterisk, right? Got to put an asterisk on it. Appeal to the league office. Over the line, Smokey! And come on, Coach Q, he's like a hockey god for walking off the stage, but Cam Newton's a petulant child. All right, society, get your act together. The Bulls have the Atlanta Hawks tonight at the UC. Will D. Rose play? Well, he sat out against Charlotte with soreness. You know what? My knee hurts too. It must be the cold. But you know what? I'm going to push through. By push through, I mean I'm going to sit here for 4 hours talking. But still, kind of the same thing. Butler's out for the All-Star game with a knee sprain, and Pau Gasol's going to go in instead. Now I'm definitely going to watch. Just think of it, Gasol all night hitting baseline jumpers, huh? Is he doing the skills challenge? I hope he wins the best hair-slash-crop-beard contest on Saturday night. He's electric. Northwestern lost last night to Ohio State, 4-8 in the Big Ten. You know what we said here on the download, that they had to go 500, and they're not. So they got to win out, and they got to go second or third round in the Big Ten tourney. Not impossible, but pretty much impossible. Derek Fisher's out as the New York Knicks coach. More and more voices talking about Tom Thibodeau as a replacement, which would be a bummer watching him revive the Knicks to glory and winning the East every year. But, you know, running down his team in the process and getting bounced in the Eastern Conference Final, only to be replaced by a Steve Kerr wannabe in like 4 years. So, yeah, I guess you can have Tibbs. And finally, Burger King is bringing grilled hot dogs to the menu next month. When asked for comment, the man with the alligator said, "They better have Dr. Pepper. Seriously." That's the carryout for February 10th, 2016. Hey, we're selling heart-shaped Euros this Valentine's Day. You know, because Chicago.
Coming up, a big day at City Council. Oh, IG oversight. Thing of the past. Also, tobacco tax, what happened with that? We'll also talk about CPS schools, the bonds, TIF money, and the March 15th primary. Mike Fouché is up next. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my guest tonight, Mike Fouché, is the man behind AlderTrack.com, a subscription newsletter that services, it covers all things Chicago and Springfield related. Mike, good to see you.
Great to be here.
A lot to talk about today. Obviously, the President of the United States comes back to Illinois, a homecoming of sorts, to try out some new material.
That's right.
He did feel like it was like when we always hear Amy Schumer's in town to try out some stuff.
And there's,
yeah. Right. That's kind of the vibe this speech had, where he's like trying some jokes out.
Right, right. Boy, did they work. I mean, you know, the thing was, so the speech was about an hour long, and you could watch it online, which I did, because I didn't go to Springfield today. And the thing is that, you know, essentially you got the feeling of this guy going into this thick soup that, you know, and he doesn't really have anything that he can do about it.
Yeah, even as the President of the United States, and there was respect for him, and, you know,
he was treated
well. General
Nobody
Assembly tried their
him.
They tried their best to act like it was a State of the Union. Like
they
this,
did.
And you're just like, no.
They so
even,
badly
even
wanted
he was
to
like,
be
no,
the
guys,
State
it's
Union.
Not that kind of speech.
Right,
like, sit down.
You haven't made
part.
It, guys. You're still in Springfield.
Seriously, don't applaud too much. Sit down.
Yeah, it's done.
But, you know, it was a great message of civility and sort of the idea of bipartisanship. And it was kind of interesting to say this is the President of the United States to come in and make a speech like this, to sort of a compassionate speech that plays to the idea that politics is compromise. And when you don't do that, the people that you serve are the people who
right.
are
and
being
so,
affected.
And that was awesome. He said, you know, you don't always have to be with your party. And then Ken Duncan, Mr. Not Always With His Party, the state rep from the Near West Side.
He shouts out. He goes,
yes! And then President Obama says, hey, I'll talk to you later, Duncan. So, I mean, he's contradicting himself.
Right.
You know, I think that there's just way, way too many landmines in this whole thing for the Barack Obama magic in order to just solve all of our problems. Little Brock dust.
Yeah, and to be honest, I mean, I don't think obviously the state of Illinois and city of Chicago were paying attention, but the rest of the country is not paying attention to the speech at the General Assembly,
it's over. Zero national press.
Yeah, zero. So let's move on, because one of the things that was happening while the president was downstate, there was a city council, there was movement in the Chicago City Council, packed to the gills, but it really was kind of in the shadow of what the president was doing. But some big ticket items, including the move to
so there were three big things that were supposed to come up today. Yeah. You know, one was that there was potentially going to be a vote on whether or not they were going to authorize $200 million for toxic swap bonds, okay, to pay off some bonds. And that was postponed from last week. And it was on the agenda, or from last month. It was on the agenda, and at the last minute, it was held to next month.
That's a big issue, and we've heard the Chicago Teachers Union and other people talking about the idea of these toxic swaps and why we're in so much debt. And it seemed like there was some movement to sort of at least address that, but it keeps getting tabled.
Well, and the issue is that there are a growing number of aldermen that think that the city of Chicago should really be suing the banks rather than paying them. And the mayor's team has said, well, you know, we haven't seen a way in which you could win a lawsuit. And there's actually now a resolution that's winding through city council that would force the city to pursue a legal route. So I think that's definitely having some
interesting
pressure.
I get to find it interesting because the mayor himself was an investment banker. The governor is big into finance, you know, in his work.
Yep.
It seems like it's almost like the byproduct of the constituency to say, we're going to vote these guys in because they're big business guys and they can deal with the trappings of big business and help us when we need to. And yet neither of them are stepping forward to say, you know what, we need to strike back on these banks because we're talking millions of dollars we paid out to
$200 million. $200 million
in
this case, yes. So that was postponed. The second thing was that the mayor this week began to try and move this tiny little $6 million tax on cigars, cigarillos, and small cigarettes, loose tobacco. And the amount of pushback that from across the spectrum of aldermen on this tax has been intense. And the argument from a lot of aldermen is, well, you know, what you're doing is you're creating this tax on things that basically keeps a lot of stores open, these small ma and pa kind of shops. These kind of sales is what keeps them going. And then there were others, actually some that in high crime neighborhoods that said, well, you know, I know people that actually sell these things illegally and they do it because it's a better deal than selling drugs.
Right.
Which is a legitimate argument, I suppose, in, you know, in a black market kind of way.
Yeah, yeah. Argument, right.
And there was an enormous amount of pushback against it. Huh. And also a lot of suspicion that the money that would be raised would actually just be going to prop up CPS rather than actual smoking cessation programs because it wasn't channeled in the right way. And they attempted to move it with some different things that say, yes, it will actually go to smoking cessation programs, but... Then there was a group of aldermen that used a parliamentary maneuver in order to shut it down and postpone it for another month, which is stunning. And the reason why it's stunning is that it to have a pair of aldermen that aren't part of the leadership, that aren't part of the big dogs, to move something, a parliamentary maneuver in order to shut down a mayoral priority.
It's unheard of.
Unheard of.
Yeah, could you imagine?
Of.
I mean, you that sort of 10 thing, years ago, try to you wouldn't even make the papers. It wouldn't even be a story. You like to pass the tax.
It's incredible that a $6 million tax was stymied. So then the third thing that was supposed to happen today was addressing there's a bill to give the city inspector general
this is the big one, yeah.
oversight over city council.
Which now this has been, I mean, the backstory on this, if you can give the quick backstory on inspector, like the maze of what has been there, the inspector general's.
There was a legislative inspector general for a while who turned out to be kind of a dog.
Right.
He took a lot of money. He didn't do a lot of work.
He wanted
Nobody
more
really
money.
Trusted him.
Right.
He wanted more money. He wasn't doing much of a job. It was separate from the city inspector general. So they let that contract lapse. That guy's gone now. He's been complaining a lot, but he's gone. And now
Faisal Khan.
And so now they're talking about folding the duties of the legislative inspector general and giving them more to the regular city inspector general.
Is Ferguson, right?
Yes, still, Joe Ferguson. Yep. And so the holdup has been, well, if you were going to have an inspector general that would be investigating city council, that means that they could look into all different kinds of legislative things that are done. And there are some deals. In particular, for some of the more powerful committees, like the Budget Committee and the Finance Committee, run by Ed Burke, and Budget Committee run by Kerry Austin. And so there was a movement in the last council meeting. They were going to have a vote. There's a majority of aldermen. They're ready to vote for this ordinance. And then all of a sudden, they use the same parliamentary procedure. Some of the big dogs use the same parliamentary procedure they used on the tobacco tax to delay it for a month. So here it was. It was ready for a vote today. And so they came up with a substitute ordinance, which is a replacement, a substitute ordinance that had some changes. And the changes specifically would eliminate some of the inspector general's powers to investigate these committees like finance and budget committee.
So essentially they took it off the table and said, you know what,
we really can't
have an inspector general inspect
everything.
which is ludicrous,
right?
And
right.
so then the powers put it back in, and the aldermen voted against it.
Well, and last night there was frantic. We talked to a number of aldermen. There were frantic phone calls. All the aldermen were lobbying each other, you know, trying to get one another. And so when it came down for a vote on the substitution, the weakened version, it was a very, very close vote. It was 25 that voted for the weakened version and 23 that voted against. That is an incredibly close vote. I mean, that's sort of a
vote. So what happens now?
So never happened. So then the weakened version, then everybody voted on it, and so now there's a weakened version.
So the weakened version it passed.
Weekend.
Oh, I see.
The weekend. Not everybody's waiting for it,
yeah,
but
right,
not
right,
strong.
Right.
And so the...
So what are we doing?
So now we have a new powers to the inspector general who can investigate aldermen, who can look into things, and they don't have to have somebody come to them and say there's a problem. The inspector general can start looking all on their own. But they can't look into things like, well, how many people work on the finance committee? You know, what sort of deals have been done?
Mike, you know, and I'm just trying to represent the people of Chicago and the state of Illinois as
Thank
best
you.
I can.
I'm not a great person
to do that. But, you know, it seems like when we hear about transparency or we hear about rooting out corruption in government, we talk about the idea of giving legislative or investigative powers or inspection powers. But it always seems like at the last minute, politicians cover their ass. And this is what it is, right? I mean, it seems to me like
sarcastic laughter.
I don't understand how that is accepted. I guess how is that accepted that they can make a weakened version that essentially eliminates the ability for an investigator to look at them? Does that make sense?
And I said this last week, is that politicians know that voters' memories are like mayflies, and that voters will forget. And they won't remember these things, and they'll move on. You know, Alder Track, we have already tweeted out how everybody voted. We're going to have a complete breakdown in tomorrow's report, which, by the way, Alder Track is free this week and next, aldertrack.com/free. We're going to have a complete vote on how everybody voted on the tobacco tax and finance committee. So, you know, if you really want to know, you want to get informed, hey, you know, read about it. But then you got to remember, come voting time.
All right. Well, let's take a break. We come back. Mike Fouché, aldertrack.com, in studio with us. Let's talk about the schools. The principals got their budget cuts.
My school got their cut.
So we'll talk about that and whether or not that's a reality, if that's going to happen. And we'll talk more with Mike when we come back. Stay with us. Yeah.
Speaking of weekend.
It's a download here on WGN. Weekend. That's right. Beats by Zim. He's you can see him here on the download through the webcam, and then on weekends at Circus.
At Circus.
Is that still a club?
Bill Deck got started. That's awesome.
Mike Fouché, my guest tonight from Alder Track, which is free this week and next week.
That's right.
Subscription newsletter covering all things Chicago politics. Let's talk schools, because this week the principals got the big announcement, the memos.
Yeah,
they sat down with the CPS brass. You're getting cut.
Yeah. So my school, my son's elementary school got a $108,000 cut. And, you know, I actually talked to one of my friends who's on the local school council, and I said, so what's going to happen? And the word is that principals were told, do not touch special ed.
That's a lightning rod. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, fortunately, my school, I guess, had enough money lying around that they were able to just cut supplies. I have no idea how they had $108,000 in supplies.
Let me know.
So nobody's
getting fired.
How does
this work? How does this work? Because this is the $100 million that
120
that they put. They just kind of said, we're going to cut this because the teacher's contract didn't happen.
Right.
This was the stuff that was announced last week. So it's a reality now.
You know, and they're saying it's because of the teacher's contract, but I think it's also partly because they didn't get enough cash from the bond issue. Remember, the bond issue was about $150 million less than they originally wanted.
So they need to balance it out.
So the schools, I mean, in the bond issue, the paper that they had put out had said that at the end of June, the school district was only going to have $33 million cash on hand. This is for an organization that's a $5.7 billion a year budget to only have $33 million. That's like, you know, looking for a few pennies in your couch at home.
So most schools around that, I mean, I saw the grid that the, I think it was DNA Info or
yeah, they all had it.
They all had
Everybody
the grid
had
of all the different schools, and most were around $100,000. Mm-hmm. So do you think that most schools will be able to sort of cut around the edges, or do you see we'll see layoffs of teachers?
Maybe.
I mean, $100,000 is like one teacher, right? When you count benefits and the cost and
that's
everything,
right.
It's about $100,000.
Maybe. I think it's hard to say. Every school is different, and this is actually where the principal's management matters. There are actually some schools. Jones High School announced that they had a $400,000 rainy day fund, and so they're actually not going to be cutting anything. They could take it all out of the rainy day fund.
This is interesting because this stems back to what Rahm Emanuel did when it came to organization of the public schools, where he said principals are in charge of their school. This was 2 years ago,
right.
Or whatever, right around the closing.
Which every principal will say is really not very true.
Yeah, true. But this in this case, I mean, they're using that and saying $100,000 off your show, you figure out what to do with it.
Right, right. And so great. They're empowered to do it. But, you know, this is another
thing. They're always empowered to do the bad stuff, right?
You're empowered to kick yourself in the face. And so this is the thing that really makes it a clear, bright line between schools that are in communities that have money and those that don't, which is that a lot of schools that are in communities that have money have these friends of nonprofit organizations that raise money. My son's school does. And you know, we give money to it because it's way cheaper to give a little bit of money to that than it is to go to a private school. And a lot of communities that you know have people of means do that. But then there are a vast majority of public schools in Chicago vast majority don't have that backstop. And I think that that's what we're really going to be looking at.
I mean, if you look
we're
at it now,
we're going to hear those stories.
I'm assuming we will. And I'm fascinated only in how you cut a teacher or cut funding in February.
Right.
Because these kids have been in class.
Right.
You know, they're in third quarter. Yeah. I mean, how do you tomorrow say, well, you know what, I'm going to cut the third grade teacher?
Right.
How do you do that?
Well, I mean, you know, in schools that have, you know, so for instance, there in my again, to use my own personal example, my son's school this year, there was a lot of discussion about whether or not his grade would have two classes or three.
Yeah, right.
And if it was two classes, there would be 33 kids in each class or 34. And if there were three, I can't do the math.
Right, right.
That's why he's in school and I'm not. But, you know,
it's Common Core.
It's Common Core, right. What? And so, you know, I think that stuff is where you find those cuts. Or maybe you cut your reading teacher. You know, I don't know.
All right, last thought tonight. Let's talk about the Illinois primary March 15th. Obviously, you know, Illinois is so far after Super Tuesday that it could be wrapped up. But there's more. Eric Zorn had a thought that was like, well, no, you know, after last night, Illinois is in play because you're now seeing no one's a front runner.
I think it's definitely for the Republican side, it definitely matters a lot. And, you know, I still am not ready to say that Donald Trump is going to be the leading candidate. You know, Pat Buchanan won two caucuses in Iowa and won New Hampshire in a blowout and came in second in Iowa when he ran. And then he basically got toasted afterwards. Bob Dole won every single state.
That's what might happen here.
Right. So, you know, I think that there's still a lot of things that can happen on the Republican side. On the Democrat side, I honestly think that things are a lot worse for Hillary Clinton than a lot of people are willing to admit. There's a lot of talk about how she has all the superdelegates locked up. But, hey, superdelegates can flip.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't sign a piece of paper.
Let me ask you this real quick as we wrap up. What are the local races that are going to start making noise that we should be paying attention to? And I don't mean just state's attorney, but beyond that.
So for state rep on the near west side, Ken Duncan is running for his life, and he could really lose against Juliana Stratton. And I think that is going to be a heck of a race. I think that on both sides, they'll spend at least $500,000.
Wow.
So it could be a $1 million race for, you know, what's going to be 4,500, 5,000 votes. And then another race that's going to be interesting also on the west side is a state Senate race for Van Pelt.
Yeah. Two former mayoral candidates.
Van Pelt, Patricia Van Pelt versus Bob Fioretti. I think that Bob is probably going to win just based on his name recognition.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think those are the big
his
things.
Win. He gets to go to Springfield. He gets to leave Chicago and go to Springfield.
He's got something to do. Right. You got to have something to do.
Mike Boucher is the man behind AlderTrack.com, which is free for the next
free,
2 weeks.
AlderTrack.com/free.
It's a subscription newsletter that covers all things Chicago politics and Springfield.
Yeah.
Mike, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you.
Phone must not be working because you haven't called me yet. The chair that I wake up in has been burned by cigarettes. I tell myself it's only smoke that suffocates and clings, and I guess we just can't have nice things. No, I guess we just can't have nice things.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. That's musician Kelly Hogan and the track We Can't Have Nice Things off her album I Like to Keep Myself in Pain. Kelly Hogan has been a fixture in the Chicago music scene for decades. She came to Chicago in 1997 and has sung with hundreds of great musicians, including Mavis Staples, John Langford, Sally Timms, Nico Case, Iron and Wine, the Decemberists. The list, it goes on and on and on. Kelly is playing at the Hideout on Valentine's Day. It's a musical review to raise money for diabetes. She returns to the Hideout, a place where, I mean, really got your start, and tended bar for a decade.
Yep.
My guest tonight at the big table, Kelly Hogan. Kelly, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me at the big table.
The big table. So
I've worked my way up.
You're going back to the Hideout. That's kind of fun. I mean, you don't live in Chicago anymore, so it's great to get back and perform at the Hideout.
Oh, always. Yeah. I'm there all the time. Or as we say at the Hideout, you never, you know, like I don't work there anymore, but you never quit the Hideout. You just go on tour. Like if I went back, everything's in the same drawers. The PBR is still in the same place in the cooler. We rehearse there. We were there all the time.
So what can we expect from the show on Sunday?
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be – let's see. Is it a cavalcade of stars? A big spice rack of stars. It's a bunch of great people. It's, let's see, Frisbee, Steve and Liam from Frisbee, Nora, the great Nora O'Connor, who I sing with all the time. Ingrid Groudon's a great singer. Steve Dawson and Gerald Dowd is kind of spearheading the whole thing, kind of organizing it with Steve and our friend Max Crawford.
Wow.
And then our super, super special guest, our friend Josh Cantor, who's the organist for the Boston Red Sox, flying in to play the show, and Nancy Faust from the White Sox, the former White Sox
famed organist. Yeah.
She's going to come
play
too. So we're going to have the dueling organs, the socks off. It's going to be socks off.
That's great.
It's going to be super great.
It plays a little bit to what you do with music as well. You're not just a musician. You're not just on stage, but you really do like to create these moments and
These fellowship, shows, right? Fellowship, yeah. Exchange. That's my favorite. I always say I'm trying to make the world smaller. So if I can just knit it together and we can all be freaks together, you know. So, yeah, just the more building bridges and cultural exchange.
Let's talk about when you came to Chicago, because you were in Georgia.
Yes, I'm from Atlanta.
From Atlanta, and you had a strong career in music. You're playing with bands, and mm-hmm. in 1997, you decided to come to Chicago. Why?
Well, I had ants in my pants, I guess. I'm from Atlanta. At the time, I was living in this neighborhood called Cabbage Town, which is very near and dear to my heart, but it was less than a half mile from the hospital where I was born, so I was just had never lived anywhere else, and I had been touring at that time for about 10 years, and I wanted to see if I could live somewhere else. And at the time, I was thinking about trying not to do music.
Really?
So I just kind of wanted a clean
Why did you want to not do music?
I don't know. It's kind of, I was broke all the time and in debt because we'd lose a transmission pretty much every time the Rocketeens would go on tour. We'd leave a transmission in Dayton, Ohio, or, you know, Columbia, South Carolina. And I was the only one with a credit card. So some people just forget to pay you back. So, you know, I was broke. And of course, if you're a musician, you've done a million other jobs. Like I'd been a nanny and I'd made burritos. And mostly I was a house painter. That was my main, like, rent paying job. So I just wanted to see if I could something else.
What were you thinking about doing? If it wasn't music, what were you going to try to do in Chicago?
Well, I've said this before. I loved house painting. I still do. I still have my tools. I'm ready to go.
If anyone out there,
and
WGN
this,
Radio,
I may have
needs
to go back to it this year because of the nature of the artistic beast that is my life. But I was wanted to work at Crafty Beaver, the hardware store, because I thought that was so funny. So I just wanted to be like Crafty Beaver. May I help you? And I figured you have to answer the phone with like beaver speak. So I don't know. I don't know. I just wanted to see the way maybe 9-to-5ers fantasize about being on a tour bus. Sometimes I'm telling you, truly, the tour bus people are like, what's a Saturday? What's a weekend? What is actually being off? Because I'm working all the time.
Well, let me ask you, because it didn't take. You came to Chicago.
Right.
It's
a really stupid town to try to quit music.
Right. You got right back into it.
Yeah, like almost. I just was shoved back into it the first stupid thing is I was friends, my boyfriend at the time was best friends with Rob Miller, who runs Bloodshot, and their publicist had left them pretty much, I mean, seriously overnight, like they came to work and there was a note, I quit, see you so long, suckers. And so Rob was helping me move all my stuff into the apartment in Chicago, and he's like, do you know how to do publicity? And I was like, well, I've done it for my own band, so they needed somebody. I needed to pay rent. So stupid thing to do if you're trying to quit music.
Yeah, but, I mean,
I went to work for Bloodshot Records.
Right.
Really stupid. So, it was dumb. And, I mean, it was great. It was great. But then I just, Dale Watson came through town that summer, and I'm friends with him from knowing him from Atlanta. We went to the show. he called me up to do a song. I did a duet with Dale. As I was coming off stage, Rob Miller was standing there, and he just went, "You're fired." Like, you should be a singer, you know. Right. I was like, what are you talking about?
You're holding out on him.
Yeah, so it just, then I oozed back in, and once I met John Langford, and then he said, you know, we should do a record on Bloodshot. And I said, who? And he's like, you idiot. So then I was back in it.
Well, that seemed to be the culture of the Hideout. And you think about the room, if you've been in the Hideout, there's the bar in the front, there's the stage in the back. Mm-hmm. But it just seems to, you kind of mentioned it about community. Mm-hmm. The idea that there's always music on that stage. And you ended up working at the Hideout. And I would assume that was part of just getting back in the music. I mean,
it was by osmosis. I was just at the Hideout. And then one day I said, can I have a PBR? And they're like, you know where they are. Get it yourself. And then I was back there getting one, and then somebody else needed one, and then and it was just the Hideout. When I first went there, being from the South, I was, Chicago to me is like the Northern South. It's very like homey in a way. Like, y'all won't admit it, but y'all are hillbillies too up here. And so just very open, and you know, no BS. And the Hideout sort of, it felt bosomy, like it just felt like my Northern family. So I was just there all the time. Make tips.
Yeah, right. It's less of, you know, hey, the ambition of like, oh, I got to get on a record, and I'm gonna. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is like a Monday night or a Tuesday night, like, hey, you wanna sing on this track? Gets up there, that kind of thing. Where it was much more about making music.
It's all about making music. That's why I'm sitting here in overalls and not a suit. You know, that's why I sit on my thrift store couch in Wisconsin, because it's about making the music, not making dollars. Sorry, Mom and Dad. So I don't have any debt, but I don't smell too good. Anyway, I've always said I have rabies for music, just making the music and what you discover every time you jump on stage. I've said this about Langford, and there's a couple other folks that, like Alejandro Escovedo, I just played with him at City Winery last week and had to learn. For the Saturday night show, I didn't even know I was going to play. I'm learning songs literally up until the minute I step on stage. I've got my headphones on, like writing down lyrics. But Alejandro Langford and a bunch of other Chicago folks, I don't even, if they just said, you know, come over here, we're going to play this show, I don't ask what the songs are. Alejandro could have pulled me up out of the crowd at City Winery. No problem.
No problem.
It's scary as hell. Yeah. But that's what I'm alive for. Sort of discovering what I'm going to learn.
Let's
from
take
it
a break
and how I feel,
because I want to ask you about that. I want to ask more about the process of
rabies.
I want to ask about rabies. Uh-huh. Kelly Hogan's my guest tonight here on The Download. When we come back, we'll talk more about not only music but the show that you're doing at the Hideout on Valentine's Day here this weekend. Kelly Hogan, my guest at the big table. Stay with us.
Rise up from your deep sleep, baby.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. My guest tonight at the big table, Kelly Hogan, musician, longtime Chicago musician who is playing at the Hideout. I want to say return. You say that you're there all the time, but returning to the Hideout for a Valentine's Day show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a charity show to raise money for diabetes. A ton of musicians who are going to be there. But you live in Wisconsin now, and you're constantly on tour. I mean, if not for your music, but you're supporting others.
Well, I was realizing this the other day. I was going to, we took some photos for my band, the Flat Five. We were doing photos at the Hideout, and I'm coming in with this big suitcase, and like, what are you bringing this suitcase to the photo shoot? I'm like, dudes, since I moved to Wisconsin in May of 2008, I realized the other day I've never played anything or done anything that hasn't been on tour. I don't do anything in my little town. I don't even go into Madison.
Is that by design?
It's more just a place so I could. I was just so busy, and I just kind of. I am from Atlanta, and it started. I needed to be closer to a creek. Like in my off time. So
do you see that as almost like a refuge or a place
it's
where
a hidey
you can put
hole.
Everything?
Yeah. And it's a little, it was like moving from, Gotham City to Mayberry. I live in this little town. I live in a cruddy rental house behind the bowling alley. Like, I can hear a good strike on a quiet night in the yard. So, you know, I just sit on the porch and watch ants instead of dodge gunfire in Pilsen. So yeah, it's just, and I tour all the time anyway. I still have boxes that I haven't opened since I moved. I've been gone.
Well, let me ask you about that, about touring, because that's a big part of what you do.
I have a toothbrush in my coat pocket over there.
You've got your band, but you also, you know, like, it feels like every other week you'll turn on a late night talk show like Conan O'Brien or something, and it's like Iron and Wine's performing and Kelly Hogan is right there on the microphone.
There's Zelig,
ladies
right
and
there
gentlemen,
in a girdle.
Yeah, the Decemberists. There's Kelly Hogan in the background. So talk about your relationship, because it's not just touring with your own music or your own band. I mean, mm-hmm. you spend most of your year on tour with other bands.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And that's what I like it. I mean, I do have the fever. And I just, it's being in the band. I mean, I finally saw that documentary, 20 Feet from Stardom. Everybody's like, Hogan, you got to see this documentary. And I saw it. And, yeah, I understand, but I don't do what I do because I want to be over there, you know, at the front mic. I do what I do because I want to be in. I enjoy the front sometimes. There's a lot more pressure and a lot less money. But the being in the band is just like you're helping lift mm-hmm. this whole thing. Nobody feels sorry for the guitar player. Oh, 20 feet from stardom, the poor little guitar player. Oh, the drummer, 25 feet from stardom. So it's not like that. I mean, I appreciated that movie, but I remember getting done with the movie and just writing it down. It's about the band. It's about being in the band.
What is it about the band? I mean, for you as a musician, you've done, I mean, you are principally, you're a singer. Mm-hmm. You know, you're also a songwriter, but
mostly
do is
singer, yeah.
And the band usually will have, you know, three or four pieces and they'll be a singer. In your case, you found a role to be backup singer, to be on the sort of the back line kind mm-hmm. of. What is it about the band that keeps you motivated?
It goes back to that thing, like fellowship and just what you get from playing together. I started off fronting bands. That's what I started off, being the singer fronting a band. And then I was in this band from Atlanta called the Rocketeens, which I always say, like, that's the best thing I've ever done musically. Mm-hmm. And like more fun probably to be in the Rocketeens than to listen to the Rocketeens, especially when I was in the band. But it was just, that was the first time I was in the band where we were all focusing in, you know, instead of being the masthead on the ship with these other guys oaring you towards wherever you're going. But I didn't know what I was doing. The first time we all ended at the same time, like, da-da, I was like, yes, yes, woo. And that's just so rudimentary. But that is kind of that's what you're all pulling and turned in kind of, you know, you're all just trying. The song is always the boss, and this is just kind of your team. Like, when you win the game as a team, mm-hmm. it feels, you know, feels good. I imagine, like, winning a chess game is cool, but winning a softball game,
as a team, right?
Yeah, yeah, so that's what I like.
I mean, your relationship with music, I mean, it's just propelled you to the point where you can do anything that you want. I mean, you can be the backup singer, you can be the front singer, you can play covers, you can have great musicians write for you, you can write your own stuff. I mean, you've really developed a career where you have a lot of options.
I guess so. I always say I try to put as many, you know, bullets in my gun, or to use a less violent analogy, like, I need as many letters on my Scrabble, you know, then you can spell more words. Like, right. The more letters you have, it's taken, I mean, I'm 51, it's taken quite a while to have this skill set, like, and I try to learn every day. I'm always learning, which is why I'm taking these crazy, that's why I'm taking the dare of going on stage just learning the song 5 minutes before.
I have to ask you about that, because that seems, I don't know much about the life of a singer or someone who's going to learn a song. When you say, quote unquote, learn mm-hmm. a song, what's the process like when Alejandro says, you know, I want you to play on this song?
And I go, what song? And we're in the dressing room.
Yeah, but how do you do that? I would feel like I'd be so mm-hmm. lost. I'm just not a musician.
So, you know, in the situation for you, like, okay, we've got so-and-so, the big guest you wanted to have, and you were about to leave, and you got your coat on, and you've had, you know, here he is. He's got him for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so you would sort of know how to sit down and build. I think of it as building a scaffolding, or sometimes building like a trapeze set. You've got the ladder and you maybe get time to make the net, maybe not. But then the thing that I build the ladder to climb up, which is sort of the time, like, I can listen to the lyrics. Mm-hmm. I can write them down. I always draw pictures of the lyrics.
Really?
Because people make fun of me, but my lyrics will have like little, you're looking down at your lyrics really fast, and sometimes you're not. It's hard. So if I see a house on fire, then I know the next
line. Well, I always, if you're a musician and you think about jazz musicians do this too. I mean, they can sit in and there's a chord structure and everyone
knows. As long
as
you have the scaffolding, yeah.
But with a singer, I mean, there are specific words you have to sing.
Right,
like that's
right.
And there has to be memorization.
Words,
and,
yeah, or cues, yeah, or like cues, you write like, stuff down.
That's the part I would be lost.
And then you just kind of have to trust the other person. And that's why I think of it like a trapeze thing, because I get up there and I jump off and I'm like, somebody catch me. You know, and Alejandro, he's looking at you. I can try to read his lips. Sometimes I'm just like, love and a butterfly, buttered toast, you know. So you're just trying to go along, or you just kind of do some vowel sounds. I've sung with Mavis Staples many times and been called in. I'm kind of the pinch singer when her awesome singer, Vicki Randall, can't be there. I have yet to have a rehearsal with that band. I have yet to have – Mavis doesn't do sound check. So, and Donnie Gerard is the other singer, great Donnie Gerard. And so I always go, Donnie, I might not get in on the first chorus, but if I hear it go by once, then I can get in on
so
it
that's
the
a big
second
part
time.
Of it is like,
so it helps if there's two backup singers, you know. Then
you can just mouth it until you're
right,
ready.
Right. And or I'll say, you know, when in doubt, I'm going to leave it out.
Do you like the adrenaline of that? I
mean, oh,
yes. I was going to say there's
something.
Look
at me, I'm all excited talking about it. I get dizzy. Oh, certainly. I like to be afraid. I work with this great cartoonist, writer, artist, Linda Berry, and she talks about in her class, she teaches, like, think of the thinker, Rodin, the thinker, mm-hmm. and he's just like, you know, he's trying really hard to think of something, and he's like, it looks like somebody on the toilet. He's never going to get a good idea. But if you think of Shiva, who's like got all these arms open to the sky, standing on one leg, you know, and who's going to get a good idea? Or you're just sort of open and a little off balance, you know, and so it's just a challenge, too. My friend in Atlanta, Bill Taff from the Jody Grind Band, I was in, my favorite guitar player ever. Wicked, amazing guitar player, left-handed, played upside down.
Oh.
He put down his guitar and he started to play cornet in this band, Smoke. And it sounded like a car, you know, for a long time. And I was like, Bill, why don't you play guitar anymore? And he was like, well, I know how to do that. You know what I mean? That's
right.
Just one of my favorite things that I ever heard. And that's one of my musical things that I go back to, and goes back to like amassing a skill set to where I feel at least I can go into these different situations and I'm going to do my best. And, you know,
we're talking with Kelly Hogan here on The Download. Let's take a break, get to the news. When we come back, more about, I mean, your approach to music, because I want to ask about your last record, I Like to Keep Myself in Pain. You sent letters out, and we'll talk about this, but you sent letters out to get songs from people you admired, and they wrote songs for you.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing to think about that. And I want to talk about
it. It was terrifying.
I want to talk
great.
About that relationship. It sounds so great. Kelly Hogan, great musician, longtime Chicagoan, who now lives in Wisconsin. She's mm-hmm. going to be playing at the Hideout on Sunday night. 6 o'clock start, we said? Yeah, 6 o'clock.
Valentine's Day. Action.
It's a benefit to raise money for diabetes. When we come back, we'll talk more with Kelly Hogan. Stay with us.
I want to hear your voice coming out of my radio.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Kelly Hogan. I keep calling you a Chicagoan. I guess you are a Chicagoan.
I feel
mean,
like
you live
that.
In Wisconsin. But her last record, I Like to Keep Myself in Pain, huge success. Also tours nonstop with the December. You just did the December.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Iron and Wine, which mm-hmm. was, and several other bands, your own band as well.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Let's talk. You got a show on Sunday, Valentine's Day, a musical review.
Yeah, it's gonna be killer with our secret weapon, Josh Canner from the Boston Red Sox coming, and Nancy Faust,
and Nancy
from, the
Faust
White Sox,
from the White Sox.
Gonna do some.
That's so
they're
great.
Gonna do some duets.
It's a musical review.
How sweet is that?
To raise money for diabetes. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. I'm fascinated by the last record, I Like to Keep Myself in Pain, because you essentially wrote fan letters to mm-hmm. some of your favorite songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about this.
I wrote to people that I had worked with. That was kind of the premise. It's not like I'm gonna, you know, it was more. Kind of my guru at my record label, Anti Records, is this man, Andy Calkin, and he suggested, he's like, you know, you've worked with these and this and this and this. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, your Rolodex is thick. And these people owe you some favors. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, these people owe you payback. And I was like, that's not true. But he was just kidding. But he said, you know, his idea was, let's ask these folks that you've sung for to give you the song, give you songs. And so it was scary.
You said it was scary. Why was it scary?
Just.
You're afraid they're going to be like, never.
Afraid of rejection. So I wrote to like Robin Hitchcock and Andrew Bird and, oh gosh, I can't.
Vic Chestnut.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, sweet Vic. Yeah. And Vic wrote the most amazing song.
And they come back and say, absolutely. And here.
Yeah.
They give you the song.
Catherine Irwin from Freakwater and all these people that I loved and admired. So I got some great songs. And then some were in sort of a more finished demo form, or M. Ward, his song Daddy's Little Girl, unbelievable. Some were just demos, you know, people with guitar, and then I kind of had to live with them for a while. And yeah,
let me ask you, as a musician, I mean, do you like the process of the artistry of singing somebody else's song, or are you more the person who said, you know what, I can write my own song? Because you've done both, you've done everything, but why count on other musicians of the same sort to be able to write songs for
you? Overwhelmingly, consider myself an interpreter. I have a very tiny bit of confidence in my songwriting.
Really?
I do it sometimes, but that isn't what occurs to me naturally.
I like the concept interpreter.
Yeah, that's why I always just feel like you're putting on, you know, somebody else's clothes and swerving it, you know, putting a belt on this, or, you know, just feeling how that feels. And maybe, especially with a song people have heard a bunch, I mean, I'm more of a fan of doing deep cuts or bringing you a song, a deep cut of somebody who might have more famous songs, and be like, oh, well, this is this song like that Paul Williams wrote that you've never heard. You've heard Rainbow Connection and you've heard this other stuff, but how about Someday Man? And so I want people to hear something in the song they've never heard before, or, you know, I just want to see how it feels. I'm just greedy. I'm just hungry. I'm song hungry.
Well, what about writing your own stuff? I mean, because you can do it. And you talked about the idea of the letters in the Scrabble. You know, we talked about the arsenal that you have.
Right.
I mean, that is part of it.
Is
that too much of a challenge for you?
I'm a total chicken of it. I'm a total chicken about it, for sure. I don't really. I know chords on guitar, I can play chords on piano and some other stuff, and I have an auto harp and things like that. But I don't really play, and so
you just have to write the lyrics, which is tougher,
right? Or I write melodies all the time. Right. Like now that I have my iPhone, sometimes I'll, you know, sing. I have some songs in my iPhone now.
So you just turn on the mic and sing into it, like you have a hook, something inspires
or
you.
A lot of times, I love a good pile driver, kink, 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 and then I start writing kind of the melody to it. If I just have some rhythm track, like I wrote a song to a car alarm the other night that I was yelling out my porch, and this guy up, because there's a tavern at the end of my alley that's pretty awesome, but this guy was like, shut up! Like, the car alarm is bad enough! But I was
Kelly
out there
Hogan,
singing,
shut up!
You know, nobody, yeah, whatever. I'm just the weirdo in the overalls that lives behind the bowling alley in my town. But so things like that. So I do write stuff. I write better with a collaborator. Like the songs, the time I was most prolific, I worked with my friend Bill Taft from Jody Grind, and he would just give me a cassette of just kind of guitar things or just rhythm progressions that he would play over and over. And I write best that way. And ever since then, I haven't really found somebody I can collaborate with.
So you really need
a
collaborator. You need
enabler. Yeah, for sure. So
let me ask you about recording, because a big part of the record, I Like to Keep Myself in Pain, was the recording process. I mean, the Anti put together, you get the musicians that came together to play were,
as if it wasn't frightening enough.
Yeah,
already.
Were intimidating. I mean, they had a track record, right?
Oh, yes, you could say. Yeah.
We're talking about someone from Booker T.
Booker T. Jones, yes. The great drummer James Gadson, Gabriel Roth from the Dap Kings, and yeah, and then we were recording in East West Studios on Sunset, where I think it's Studio B, where Pet Sounds was made, where all the Mamas and Papas records were made.
As a student of music.
Oh my God, it was we should have packed Depends in our luggage, but it was, well, especially all these people were kind of on board, and then Andy Calkin from Anti, he's like, well, let's talk about guitar players. And I was like, no. If I'm going into this situation with Booker T and James Gadson and all this stuff, I'm bringing somebody to the party. And I brought Scott Legan, who's originally from Peoria, lives here now, an amazing, he's in our band, The Flat Five, mm-hmm. my band here in Chicago. He's in NRBQ. He kind of helms NRBQ now with Terry Adams. And he's just, as I say, my compliment about him is he's not even fit to deliver pizza. I don't want him touching a pizza. He's just a musician. That's all he does everything. He's a wizard. And I knew those people were going to be blown away by him. And it was like, you know, when Pepe Le Pew gets hearts for eyes, that was how Booker T and Scott Legan were like, I love you, I love you. Like, they were super in love right off the bat.
So what was the process like? I mean, you take us through a recording session.
We all got there. Well, Scott Legan, speaking of enabler, when I got received these songs over like a 2-year period of gathering songs from all these great people, and then Scott Legan and I holed up in his apartment up near Lincoln Square with the clanging radiator and just sort of went through the demos, and then we played. I learn a lot about songs by playing them live, mm-hmm. and so we played a series of Mondays at the Hideout just to kind of clang them out blacksmith style, see what worked, see what didn't work. But we also wanted to leave a lot of room.
Almost like a stand-up comic.
It's the same concept,
new jokes, right?
It totally. And so we had kind of these ideas, and we had just sent these demos of just me and acoustic guitar to all the fellas in the band, the wizards in the band, the men in the band. The legends in the band. And then we got there. We didn't want to overthink everything. I had some ideas about which ways I wanted certain songs to go, but I certainly wanted to hear what Booker T had to say.
Yeah, right. Were the musicians invested in that regard? I mean, did they say, let's do this? Did they start
song by
song? They were giving you ideas?
And they were super respectful. And it's, you never know how that's going to work, if it's going to gel, or, you know, you can assemble all these people, but whether it's really going to, you know, click or not is kind of up to fate and everybody's openness. And they were super respectful at first. And then, you know, we just came in on that Monday at 10 o'clock and loaded in and just were like, well, what do we start with? And just start with a song. And then we'd have lunch and we'd be like, well, let's try it this way after lunch, or let's do this or change the key. And so it was a total communal effort. I mean, I had the say so. I was the captain, mm-hmm. and drove the ship, but it was amazing just to have this week of creating this record, like literally ground up, just creating this record with these amazing folks.
You mentioned your guitar player not being fit to deliver pizza.
Poor Scott.
Let's talk about Scott. Let's talk about you.
Okay.
You know, when we talk about, you know, your life, and you kind of hinted a little bit in this interview, just talking about and coming to Chicago and not sure if you want to do music, mm-hmm. and jumping back on, and now, you know, it's 2016, and you see yourself when you get away from music to go back home or to Wisconsin. What do you consider yourself when you talk about your future? I mean, do you see yourself like continuing the touring, the playing in the band, backing up the Decemberists, backing up Iron and Wine, doing your own work? What do you see yourself when you talk about in the immediate future when it comes to Kelly Hogan and her music?
Well, it's a driving force every day. Like I'm learning a song on the way down here for the Valentine's Day, you know, benefit. I'm always learning songs or thinking about music or listening to other. I have rabies, as we said. But another thing we sort of referred to is, you know, I do have my house painting equipment, mm-hmm. and the way I live is really, it's like a free agent. It's up and down.
Yeah, but if somebody came and said, I want you to house paint, you're going to have to put music aside. Will you paint this house for 4 years?
No.
No, you would not. No,
music gets first call, yeah, okay. But I'm always ready to, you know, I don't care if I eat or not, but I got two little dogs who are going to be awful. You know, I got to buy kibble. So yeah, I mean, I'm open. I do work with Linda Berry, and she's a professor now at UW, but I still help her with her classes. One of my day jobs
Long-time
now.
Longtime reader, cartoonist. Here
definitely,
Chicago,
yeah. I'm a super fan, and that's how I ended up in Wisconsin, because we're best friends, and she and her husband moved up there, and I was painting her house in Evanston to help them sell the house, and then I was just up there all the time because we worked together, and so when I thought, oh, I'm going to go to the country, they started saving me the thrifty nickel, and that I ended up 8 miles down the road from Linda and her husband and their farm where she works. And my day job now this winter has been, they're doing kind of systematically re-releasing all of her old stuff, like, but then more things. Mm-hmm. She's re-releasing the greatest of Marlis, but she's putting more Marlis material that never was in the first book. So I'm helping organize her studio, which has never been done. It's crazy to be like, you know, I'm alternately vacuuming up cat hair and holding in my hand like her sculptures and like the originals of all her artwork, and just do it. So I do that over at Linda's studio during the day. So working with her, I'm very fulfilled in that too, based on the things she does in her class are amazing. So I've had some trouble with my voice this winter. I blew out my voice in December, which does lead you to think, like, what would I do if I can't sing anymore? It's the most terrifying question to me. But
that's a question you've had to deal with in the last couple of
months? Yeah, just in the last, I blew out my voice in December, and nothing, no surgery or anything. I just had to
rest it.
And so I do like painting houses. I do like the zen of it. I like a physical job. I like a job with coveralls, you know, one zipper, boom, I'm out the door. And I do like my work with Linda, and I'd like to explore that more. She teaches this week-long class at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck every July, and then she's been after me for 10 or 12 years to do a little part about singing, because the class is about the power of images, whatever you cloak it in, you know, writing, dance, a song. So I'm finally taking the plunge in July, and I'm working on getting my syllabus together and stuff right now. So I could, you know, I'm interested in that.
Every time we do the big table every night, and we have somebody in, and we have a long conversation. And I always like to end asking about Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Because for you, I mean, you're
a
transplant. You came here 1997, and now you're still in Chicago, but you live in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. I just have a very long driveway. I try to think about it like that.
So
my driveway's really long.
What kept you here? What does Chicago mean to Kelly Hogan?
It's definitely where, I mean, I'm from Atlanta, and I do love Cabbage Town, but when I first moved up here and I was homesick, after a very short while, if I'd go back to Atlanta, I realized it's not necessarily the town. I'm not homesick for Atlanta. I'm homesick for a time that I had there with certain friends. And so it's kind of almost a superpower if anybody out there has moved from where you're from, and it can seem really scary. And once you do it once, you're like, oh, yeah. This is a superpower, you know, goodbye, because you can kind of take it everywhere. But Chicago is where my heart is. And I had to tell my mom that, you know, are you ever going to move back home? Because you live in a little town. And my mom lives in a little town in Georgia, like the one I live in Wisconsin. And I was like, I'll never move back south. If I moved back anywhere, I would move to Chicago. I do miss it a lot.
When you think of Chicago as a music town, what is it about this community, the community that you've been such a big part of?
Like, everybody's, in my experience, very open and to cross bridges and, you know, make the world smaller and see what everybody brings to the table and let's shake it up and see what happens. And just the culture here is amazing, all the dance and the art. Just, I'm looking out the window here. I mean, just
Michigan Avenue.
Tribune building, and just, it's just so full. It's so meaty. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a town based, born of meat and sinew and gristle and that awesome fat part that everybody likes. But yeah, it's power. It has muscle and Chicago's just got it going on. And I like the exchange of ideas. My one thing, I almost didn't move here because the maps stop at Museum of Science and Industry. I almost didn't move here because of kind of the racial separation in Atlanta. We're more mixed up, like coleslaw.
It's not like that.
No. So that was one reason I almost didn't move here. But then when I did move here, I've kind of made it my goal to shrink the city or turn it, like, build little bridges. We're just as freaky over here, people. Come on, you know, like, let's. So I try to work towards that too. Like, let's all.
Well, this,
come on,
this
party down.
Party down this Sunday.
Come to my picnic.
We got the Valentine's Day musical review, which is at the Hideout.
Picnic.
Kelly Hogan will be there, as well as others. It's a raising money for diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Hogan, a longtime Chicago musician who is, you said it here, is not going to stop anytime soon, unless there's the house painting business gets out of control.
Shoo!
I can see the ambition.
Wax on, wax off, man, all day long.
Kelly Hogan, thanks for being my guest today.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Oh. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you to 11 o'clock tonight. Patty Vasquez in at 11. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Coming up at 10, Character Flaws. That's our Wednesday special where we bring you sketch comedy, improv, performance, characters, all the stuff that this great city has to offer. You know what's one of the great things, Pete, is that Second City actually moved into the Trib Tower. So they have, like, their business section. So a lot of actors that I've known and comedy writers and people for years are trouncing their winter jackets through the lobby here. And I'm like, yo! Okay, come in. I want you to do some bits. Let's do some bits. So that's great. I mean, that's actually a great thing. It's not so scary for them to come downtown. Because if you've met an improviser, they're like, if it's not in Wrigleyville or Old Town, I don't really know where it's at. So that's then they get older and they move to Andersonville. That's usually where I've got it down. Maybe they'll make it to Evanston. Maybe, but doubtful. That's a long trek. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. This hour, in an effort to develop lifelong readers, readbrightly.com has put together a list of the 50 best books for 7- and 8-year-olds. In other words, Read Brightly's got your back. If you're a parent of a 7- or 8-year-old, or you have been, or you're planning on being one, you know how difficult it is to find good books for your kids to read. You know, and not just books, I mean, just to find the interest in reading, because there's just so much competition for their eyeballs. I mean, the iPad can't get my kid to not look at that thing for more than, 20 minutes. You want the book to be sophisticated, but you want it to be age appropriate. You want it to be a good story, but you want it to teach lessons. And it can't be like, funny character goes to the zoo. That's over. That's 6 years old. We got to get rid of that. When Read Brightly took to the task of putting this list together, they naturally turned to our next guest, Betsy Bird. She's a collection development manager at Evanston Public Library. Before that, Bird worked for the New York Public Library. Bird's not just a librarian. She's also an author. She's written children's books like Giant Dance Party. She's also the co-author of an adult book, Wild Things, Acts of Mischief in Children's Literature. And she was a regular reviewer of children's books for the New York Times and for her blog, Fuse 8 Productions. We met Betsy over the summer. She was a great guest on the show. It's my pleasure to welcome her back to the download. Betsy, good to see you.
See you too.
We were talking about this earlier. Pete and I were like, can we call you the resident librarian of the download, right?
Yes, you can.
We haven't had any other librarians though.
I have no competition. I'm just going to revel in that.
There we go. So last time we talked, the listeners had so many questions. Betsy's here, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You got a question about a children's book? You have a recommendation for us? Want something you love? You're looking for a book to give your child for Valentine's Day? Always a great gift as opposed to candy.
Absolutely.
You know what?
You
this is a great place.
If you want to chew on a book, go for it.
You could chew
it's
on
open.
A book.
Yeah.
So, Betsy, when Read Brightly, came to you to say, let's talk about this. I mean, what's special about this age group, 7 and 8 years old?
So I like to say there's two age levels where you lose kids as readers. The first one I'd say is when they're in middle school and they're transitioning from middle grade books to YA books. That's an easy place. That's a hard age right there. That's where you lose a lot of kids. But the one that even before that is when they are going from like the easy, Cat in the Hat, Elephant and Piggy, if you're from the 1950s, Dick and Jane. And then they're going from that to, I want to read the first Harry Potter, and there's got to be something between those, And that's where you get these early chapter books that don't really have a name. A universal name that everyone can recognize. And because kids read at so many different levels when they're 7 and 8, you can't just say, well, it's exactly this many pages with this many pictures and this many words. It doesn't fit like that. So the nice thing about the Read Brightly list is that it is a big range. It is from long form picture books to chapter books that you could read at bedtime and everything in between that.
You know, when we think about those kind of books, I mean, there's such a wide range. Where do you even start? I mean, do you start with classics? When you talk about this list of the best 50 books for 7- and 8-year-olds, what would be your starting place?
It's so tricky because, you're saying classics, but classic books didn't really cater to this age. I mean, if you think of all your classic books, you think picture books or you think Charlotte's Web. And Charlotte's Web will work for some kids, and it will not work for other kids. So where I've sort of been collecting these books because they're such odd books. So I've sort of been collecting them over the years. And so I have my little list that I was able to go to where I was like, that book was awesome. And I'm just going to hold on to it because, you know, it's that weird age level. But publishers have totally caught on to this. And so every year you actually see more and more interesting sort of early chapter books that fall in that age range, which is good.
Well, it feels like whether it be Judy Blume or Roald Dahl or any of the sort of classic literature or children's literature, those seem to be the go-tos.
And actually, they did good early chapter books. You know, Roald Dahl did The Magic Finger, which is creepy, but good. The Twits, also creepy, so good. Judy Blume, Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing.
Right.
I mean, talk about your excellent book for luring children into. In this book, a boy swallows a turtle. See what happens.
You know, it's you're following what your school is. I mean, because there'll be a curriculum in the reading classes for second and third grade where they say you got to do a chapter book, you got to do this. A lot of times they choose the book and you go with it. So what do you recommend? Because a lot of times, you know, this is assigned reading for the kids. Is the idea that they continue, like if they get through that book and they want more, they come to the library and they check out other stuff, so check out that list? Or is this the kind of thing that you're talking to teachers and to other people who are saying, you should check these books out too because they could replace the ones that you've gone to?
Both. I would say both, absolutely. I mean, the problem with some of these lists that you get in the schools is that in some cases, these lists have been the same lists for the last, 20 years.
Right.
And the teacher's like, well, they're great books. And that may be true, but they're also, if you look at them, they're so white. Oh, they're so incredibly white. Except for, like, Tales Julian Tells, which is a great book, but there's a lot of really dated stuff in that. And it's like, the only, like, African-American. And they always put it on the list. They're like, there it is. Bam. There it is. And so the nice thing about this list is it's very multicultural, very diverse. Lot of different religions, ethnicities, you name it, on this list. A lot of new stuff. Because we have some really good new books coming out right now. We do try to like show it to the teachers and they're like, hey, check it out. Awesome books. And they're brand new. And then we try to get the parents involved and the kids, because if the kid likes one of these, a lot of these are series books and then they can go and they can go to the library to get more. We would love that, but they can go and buy them.
Betsy Bird is with us tonight. She is the collection development manager at the Evanston Public Library. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the specific books that are on the list. Also talk to some of the listeners. 312-981-7200. What resonated with your 7 or 8 year old? What do you remember as somebody who was reading chapter books as a kid? What are you thinking about when you are getting assignments from your teachers? 312-981-7200. We'll be right back here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest, Betsy Bird. Betsy is the collection development manager at the Evanston Public Library. She's had a long history with children's literature. She came from the New York Public Library system where she was it children's collections? What was your...
I bought all the kids' books for Manhattan, Staten Island, and the Bronx.
There you go. And we talked about this in this great conversation. You can find it online. Last time we talked, because we talked about what that means for libraries, because there was such a transition, because it used to be, that's where whatever they got off for donations. Mm-hmm. So a ton of Clifford books. Mm-hmm. And you came in and sort of put a different spin on it and went after sort of bringing the libraries in New York to the 21st century when it comes to children's literature.
Sure.
So we talked about that already. Tonight we're talking about, all right, at 7 and 8 years old is sort of the prime age to get kids interested in reading until they have another prime age in when they're a little bit older.
Right.
That's what we've established. So let's talk about this list, this readbrightly.com list, best 50 books for 7, 8 year olds. They came to you, among others. When they come to you, what are your suggestions? What were your contributions to this list?
So I had a bunch. I have my favorites. We all have our favorites. The ones that you feel like that person who like loves a really obscure rock band and you're like, this was awesome. And then if it actually becomes popular, like, man, I was into that early chapter book before you people were.
We're getting into the mind of librarians.
Yeah. So that's my life. So here's what I contributed. And now they're going to be all popular. And I'm going to have to be like, I was into this. So there's like Anna Hibiscus by Adonuke. Okay. So this is a contemporary book set in the continent of Africa, okay. Modern, like she lives in a city.
What's it called?
Anna Hibiscus.
Anna Hibiscus.
Awesome. It's like first in a series. They're awesome. Her mom's white. Her dad is African. And she's got a million relatives, and it goes through like just basic date. It's like she's like the Ramona of like the 21st century, essentially. Not that not that there's anything wrong with Ramona of the 20th century. She is still up to date and fantastic. So I have to couch my comments.
Line up, right?
I know. It's like, how dare you?
How dare you take
how
on Ramona?
How dare you take down Ramona? I am not saying... Ramona is on this list as well. But yeah, so Anna Hibiscus, so funny, so good. The illustrations are killer. They're so wonderful. So I contributed that. Bad Kitty, I believe, by Nick Brule. I believe I contributed Bad Kitty. If you are unfamiliar with Bad Kitty, it is about a kitty who is not particularly good. they are early chapter books in which my daughter, who is 4, also loves them because the narrator is consistently yelling at the cat, who will physically harm the narrator occasionally if having to go to the vet or something like that occurs. They are very funny, very well done, and the art is fantastic. So love that. Wanted some silly stuff on there too. And, there's Lola Levine Is Not Mean, which came out last year. It's by Monica Brown. And this is a book about I believe she is Peruvian-American Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you've got like 500 of those on your shelf. But this, I just, you know. This one,
right?
Plays soccer. So there you go. And so that's a little different. That's a sort of a different take on your classic Peruvian-American Jewish girl early chapter book stories. So... well done there. You know what? If you just want to go like totally classic, My Father's Dragon by Ruth Stiles Gannett, which came out, more than 50 years ago. Really basic, about a boy who needs to save a dragon, like you do, and goes through very small adventures with animals on an island. And it is still a huge freaking hit.
Ask you, because you know all these books sound great and you're gonna get them and you're gonna introduce them to your child, but you know, we've kind of been talking about how we've seen a different generation approach reading because of the technology. Now you could say one like with iPads and with tablets and phones and all that kind of stuff, that there's more sort of attention to the written word because that's the communication tool. But it seems like more often than not, you're seeing kids in this generation be distracted from reading or finding different things than reading a book. Our generation was similar. We had other things to do, but it didn't seem so far away.
It wasn't quite as far away. I mean, there was... That's just the thing. As technology gets better and better, there are more things to do. And yeah, we absolutely, I watched my Space Ghost. I loved my TV as a kid. And my baseball cards and my comic books and my newspaper comics. And that's it.
That's it.
We didn't have much else. We had sticks and stones to play with. That's what I was like when I was... And Pokeballs. Yes. So kids today, a lot of distractions. They do like reading on their e-readers. They don't like it as much as we think they do. Recent study came out and says they actually prefer print books. Mm-hmm. That is not universal. That is not every single child. But by and large, they have their times when they like to read on their e-readers and their times when they don't. And so that's not even like a go-to when it comes to it. Like here's like you can't like wave the Kindle and be like, look, I've got an electronic device. Read this book and you can use it. That doesn't actually work that well.
Well, I mean, what do you do? I mean, if you're an exasperated parent who wants your kid to get into reading and it's not working in some form or it's they're only doing it for homework and things like that, mm-hmm. What do you do to get your kid interested in books?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question. Because you can do that thing where you lure them in with the book that is already popular that they're seeing everyone else reading. So thank you, Diary of a Wimpy Kid. You've got your books that like they see all the other kids at school, like, I've got the latest Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and everyone like goes and tries to get it. And then they really want to read that book. So that's peer pressure, 2 thumbs up when it comes to reading.
Yeah.
It's actually a very effective
method.
My son
has Goosebumps. The same
thing, yeah. Goosebumps, which was around when my sister was a child. Goosebumps, for whatever reason, continues in popularity. Things, I've, for whatever reason, Babysitter's Club, same thing, even with the terrible 80s color covers with a ponytails coming out of the top of their head, still read very well when kids can actually get their hands on it.
Does it have to do with what you see when Hollywood will make a movie of Goosebumps or will make The Diary of a Wimpy Kid? Is that a good thing? I mean, I think
it's a fine thing. I don't think it actually gets anyone to read the book. Yeah, right. I don't know any child who would sit down and watch the Goosebumps movie and be like, that looks like a fine piece of literature. I think I will go to my nearest library and check these Goosebumps series out. I don't think that's how it works. I don't think that's sometimes. But generally, I would watch this because, you know, I would buy these books for the library and I'd buy the kids' books and I'd be like, oh, the movie's coming out. And sometimes, like, I would buy just like a ton of copies and they would just sit there for whatever reason. And then sometimes I would buy like 4 copies and then it was like the biggest hit of the century, you know, like Coraline, for example. But that's partly also because, like, suddenly very canny teachers and parents would be like, oh, you have to read something. Oh, you enjoyed that movie. Well, look at it. There's a book, and you've just seen the movie. You might enjoy this book.
Right.
So I think there is a great deal of use with these movies.
So maybe that's a way that you can get
sure.
Kids.
That's a lure.
That's a lure. Right.
You can. I know some families that have done the. You can't watch the movie until you've read the book, and then be horribly disappointed by how Hollywood adapted it. But that's a learning experience you have to go through.
Spoken
at some
like
point.
A true librarian, right?
Exactly. Now you can be curious about what they did to that book.
The list is the 50 best books for 7 and 8 year olds. It's at readbrightly.com. That's readbrightly, readghtly.com. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll take a break for the news because I do have some texts I want to that come in, some questions for you.
Sure.
312-981-7200. When we come back, more with Betsy Bird with the Evanston Public Library here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Betsy Bird, the resident librarian for The Download. We just decided that today.
That's going to get that on.
She's a collection development manager at the Evanston Public Library. She comes from New York, where she revolutionized the New York Public Library children's collection. Sure.
We're going to go with that.
We'll go with that.
Don't be listening, people in New York.
We're in Chicago. It doesn't go that far, right?
Exactly.
But we're talking about the Read Brightly list, the best 50 books for 7 to 8 year olds. You know, this is an interesting time because schools, like we have been talking about, schools have really been the catalyst, especially, you know, second, third grade classes, to assign chapter books, to, you know, to say this is the next one. I mean, book reports. Book reports are huge.
Oh, book
you got to do like for a quarter, you have to do 10, 15.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also interesting because it's Black History Month. Mm-hmm. So they'll say, okay, you have to read a book from the Coretta Scott King Award.
Yes.
And again, we kind of talked about this off air, just about the idea that this is that concept of like, we're just going to, anything that Coretta Scott King sort of,
awards.
You know, made it an award, that's good enough.
Right. If it appears on the list.
Right. And
I'm
it's not
sure it's
necessarily
fine.
Always appropriate.
It's not, because the thing is, it's not, there's the award for illustration, there's the award for the writing, and the writing isn't done by the Coretta Scott King picture book, the Coretta Scott King like middle grade novel, the Coretta Scott King YA. It's just all sort of like lumped into one big pool, which is perfectly fine if you've got somebody who knows the books and is like, okay, this would be appropriate for this age level and this would be appropriate for this age level. If you don't, if you just sort of throw the entire list at a child and say, pick the thing on there that you think you want to read by the title alone, or sometimes if you're lucky, the description, you're going to get some pretty, you know, I'm not going to say inappropriate, I'm just going to say things that a child would not necessarily be assigned if the person knew what they were assigning.
And, you know, as I guess the question I'd have is like, for some of the books, when we talk about, you know, age appropriate, at what time do you start seeing in middle school, fourth grade, fifth grade, whatever it is, where you start to see more complex ideas? For instance, death, you know, crime, poverty, those kind of things that start to come up where authors will take on a little bit more complexity as opposed to this character goes to the zoo. Look
right,
at the thing,
exactly.
You know, like that kind of thing.
I mean, and this list actually has Charlotte's Web on it. So, I mean, kids can take a lot. And I'm going to confess to you, I'm going to have to make a confession right here and now. My daughter, who is 4, is slightly precocious, And I may read her things that are not entirely appropriate for her. So, and my husband and I will, for half a moment, be like, should we or should we not? And then she'll be like, yes! And we're like, well, she said yes, so that must mean it's okay. So there's this amazing graphic novel about the life of Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman's life, a lot of pain in that life. A lot of pain. And here I am reading it to a four-year-old, so I'm just going to put that out right there. That's what you're dealing with here. However, there are other books that deal with very dark subject matter. For example, in the same series, a delightful book, Donner Dinner Party. Not reading that to my four-year-old.
Right.
thank you. No. Another book in the series on World War One. Not going there.
Well, I mean, that's the issue. I mean, at what point?
But that's the thing. It depends on the kid. I mean, there are some kids who would, you know, get through two pages of the Harriet Tubman book and be like, ah! And she may turn into that in 2 years. In 2 years, she might be like, I cannot take this. And we'll be like, that's totally understandable. And then when she's nine, she might pick it up again.
Well, I mean, I would say it's a good thing for parenting in the way that, like, for instance, we talked about the Coretta Scott King. This was a book, a Coretta Scott King winner called Yummy.
Yes, by Greg Neri.
And Yummy is about, I guess you'd call it a graphic novel, right?
It is a graphic novel.
Novel about Yummy Sandifer, which is a very well-known story in Chicago.
Yes.
And I was kind of like, wow, this is a graphic novel about, this is, if everyone remembers, I mean, I remember covering it as a journalist. It's like the young boy who killed, was a gang member, he killed. He then was caught by the gang. Like the gang ended up executing him.
Yeah,
it's just a terrible story.
Really young, yeah.
It's not like what you see on the news today, like on the South Side of Chicago. That's the book that my son is reading.
Right, and it was written for like a middle school audience, I'd say, though it is owned by a lot of young adult libraries, like library collections.
But what I loved about the book, and I will say this, is that there is a complexity to it.
Yeah.
And what I really liked about it was I was like, okay, he was scared. Mm-hmm. He was scared, and you could see
how horrible his home life is.
Right.
You see why he made decisions he did, you know, be they good or incredibly bad. And you get it from the perspective of another kid, as a fictional character who's sort of seeing him, both the good side of him and the really horrible side of him. Who is trying to figure out if he was... I mean, the whole point of the book is, was he a good or bad kid?
Yeah.
And which is what the media in the book is trying to figure out. I mean,
It's very complex. Yeah. Like, I myself was like...
13-year-olds, yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I found myself a lot going, all right, go to bed.
Exactly.
But it definitely was a challenge for me as a parent to sort of navigate that story, because it's a horrific story, and you know, there's killing and there's gangs and there's Chicago, and we live in Chicago, so there's a lot going on.
I mean, and as a parent, it's your total right to be like, this book is not appropriate for you. We're pulling this book. You know, that is totally your right. And it depends on the kid. I mean, there might be some kids who are like, you know, this is a very familiar story. This content is very familiar to me. I understand these characters. I live in this world in some way. You know, this book totally makes sense for me. And other kids who are going to be like, this book is actually making me scared. I do not want to read this book anymore. Yeah. Yeah. Kids are wonderful self-selectors.
I can't wait. I am fascinated. We haven't done it yet, but I can't wait to see the book report.
Yeah.
I want to see what he pulled out of it.
Well, I want to see if anyone else in the class read it, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because, again, it was like, pick a Coretta Scott King winner.
And the thing with Coretta Scott King, and this is true of many books written for kids about the African-American experience, is so many of them are just like, civil rights, civil rights,
right.
And also slavery.
Right.
And to find something contemporary is incredible. Incredibly, you know, hard to find. Fortunately, like, publishing now, we're seeing a slow increase in more books about contemporary African American life. But it is not by any means a vast number of books that come out every year.
Let's get to some of the text. 815 says, when can you get them? I guess it's them would be 7 or 8 year olds or kids. When do you get them interested in biographies?
I would say as soon as humanly possible. They make fantastic picture book biographies out there. And, you know, if you can hook a kid on a good biography. There is a series, and I will confess, when it first came out, I was like, this series, it's no good for the libraries. But it's fantastic. It's by Brad Meltzer. And he has this kind of Peanuts, Charles Schulz style that he takes to biographies. And some of them are like the standard biographies, like Helen Keller and Jackie Robinson and Martin Luther King. But he'll also do like, and Lucille Ball. It's like, what? which is a great biography.
Right, right.
And they're great books. The kids get totally
Brad Meltzer.
Into them. Brad Meltzer. And I'm sure there's a name in the series. No idea what it is. But if you look at Brad Meltzer and his biographies, you know, and I think they've got titles like I Am Martin Luther King and stuff like that. They are great books. They are, you know, the Amelia Earhart and all that. They look like they're five, like from the start to the end. But kids dig it.
That becomes an issue for parents, too, because now schools, as you get older and you get in the third, fourth, fifth grade, they say enough of the fiction, nonfiction.
Well, and that's the thing is, we often find that some readers, like boys, like nonfiction a lot. Like some type of boy readers, there are girls who like nonfiction absolutely as well. But what we've often found is that reluctant boy readers sometimes are nonfiction readers, and they're being forced fed this fiction for a really long time. On the other side of the coin, there's kids who just have only read fiction, and then you're feeding them true stories. The nice thing is that when I was a kid, like, nonfiction was the vegetables with the
right.
meal. It was like, oh, goody, I get to read a book about the goods and services of this particular state. Wonderful. And now nonfiction is awesome. It's really, really good, really well written. If you can find a librarian or a bookseller who knows their children's nonfiction, you can get some killer stuff. Just like crazy good writing is going on right now. So we are in sort of a children's nonfiction golden age of literature, which is wonderful.
Betsy Bird is with the Evanston Public Library. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with her. She's the resident librarian here for The Download. 312-981-7200. If you got any questions about children's books, stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Betsy Bird in studio. Good to have you back.
Thank
it was
you.
A great Good conversation this summer. I'm having a great conversation now. The Download's resident librarian. I guess she has other titles, too, not
do
just
I?
That.
I do.
You do. Collection Development Manager at the Evanston Public Library. Also came from the New York Public Library system, where she was pretty much in charge of ordering all the children's books for all of New York City.
Three boroughs.
Three boroughs.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. They're more than three.
Not, yeah.
All right, so let me go to the text, because there's more texts that come in. Anthony wants to know out of 815, when the Harry Potter books first came out, says parents wanted those books removed from school libraries. Mm. Why were they against those books?
Depends on which parent you're talking about. I mean, you've got some parents who didn't like it because of witchcraft. So that's, you're always going to get that. Then you have the parents who, right away, no one really paid much attention to them. It didn't really happen until the third book came out, and then people started paying attention to them. After the third book, they became a little more YA. They became a little more teen. Because he was becoming a teen, which was sort of an unusual situation. And so people were saying, no, these books are more teen because he's doing more teen things. And other people were like, no, he starts out as a kid, so it belongs in the kids section. And so, yeah, there was all sorts of reasons people wanted to move Harry around.
Do you see that? I mean, because you'll hear that once in a while in the media, it'll percolate up that somebody has a problem. Mm-hmm. A group will have a problem with a certain book and how it's being taught or how it's being sort of displayed in a library. Do you see that? I haven't heard a story like that in a while.
Mostly they just never go reported. Like, I think someone did a study once, and most of these are the only reason these ever get reported is if it makes the news, or if they're reported to the American Library Association, based here in Chicago, and they have like this official form, you know, for like challenges made within a school library or a public library to various children's books. And that's where you get the lists of like the top 10 most banned books of a given year, which does happen. You don't hear about it as often because it's usually just the same 10 books every single time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's only so many times.
What kind of books are on? What would be a banned children's book?
Oh, there's so many of them.
Really?
Yeah. Some of them would totally surprise you. Like The Diary of Anne Frank, sexual content. Because there are two different versions of it, you see. Oh, and sometimes people order one and they get the other one. But it's things like there's a picture book called And Tango Makes Three, I think it's like 10 years ago this came out. And it's a true story. It took place in a zoo in New York City about two male penguins that were in love and raised an egg together. And you would think this was the most evil book that ever was ever made.
Really? Yeah. So it's when social issues, political issues get in.
Yeah, it's social issues, political issues. Yeah. It's content. You know, some books that came out for kids have a fair bit of swearing in them.
Really?
Which people forget about. Bridge to Terabithia has quite a few dammits and hells in there. And people then people
so
are
essentially
reading it with their
parents
kids.
Yeah they read it with their kids,
they're reading
they
with their kids and like what the why yeah. is this in the library?
Do you get a lot of feedback from people who come back in from who may check out children's books and they come back and they tell you what they think of it?
Generally, when I was working in New York, what would happen was just if someone had a problem with a book, they just say, "I think this belongs in the teen section." They wouldn't say like, "Ban it, ban it! Don't allow any other child to read it." That does happen if they think there are outdated racial things in it. But even then, that doesn't happen all that often. But yeah, the only borough where people actually tried to ban stuff was Staten Island.
They just didn't want it.
They're in completely different people. In Staten
yeah,
Island.
It's yeah. probably my friend Neil.
There you go. Okay. Well, I'll have a talk with him then.
Yeah, no.
Ask him not to do that
anymore. He just is probably just doing it as a bit. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So as, you know, what... Okay, so the schools get out, and they're going to get out here in May and June. Mm. And then in the summertime, what do you recommend parents to do? I mean, because there's always been this sort of like, make sure they don't have the summer blah, you know, like...
The summer slide.
Like, when
your
you're in second...
Like, leave
yeah.
the school, and then they'll be like two grade levels behind in their reading if they don't...
It's all pretty much about reading. So, yeah. So the idea being like, what do you recommend parents to do with spring break, with other places, or even complementary or additional to what's being done in the school?
See, the thing is like the school will assign books... like for the summer, but what will happen is like the last 2 weeks before school begins, you'll suddenly get this influx of parents that are like, they haven't read all summer. They need to read like five of these books.
Right.
You must have them. What you do is if you want your kids reading over summer, you find what adults do. You find beach reads. You find the silly fun. You know, people are like, oh, as long as they're reading, you know, that's your attitude. Well, yes, quite frankly, yes, as long as they're reading. Get the comics out. Get the ridiculous, you know, Guinness Book of World Records. Get the Guinness Book of World Records. The guy with the fingernails that curl all around. Get that guy. That guy is very useful. He gets the kids reading. Get whatever, you know, the books on sports facts and figures. You know, we have a ton of them.
We do.
Just get whatever you can. You know, if they want to pick up your National Geographics, give them a National Geographics. If they want to pick up, you know, whatever. Just as long as they are reading and it's appropriate.
Right.
Get them what they think is fun.
All right, here we go. This is my final recommendation for Valentine's Day. This is something that I feel like would be a good thing to get books about love or books about, books about Valentine's Day, or not even, but what do you recommend for someone who doesn't want to go get chocolate for their kid or buy a video game? What are suggestions for Valentine's Day?
For the parents to do for the kids for Valentine's Day. That's a good question. I mean, if the kid's going to expect chocolate, the last thing you want to do is be like, here's a big box and it's full of Encyclopedia Brown. It's like, that's a terrible thing. That might be the number one way to make a child hate reading. I was promised chocolate and I got a book. Thanks. So thanks so much, Mom. No, but what you can do is you can give them both.
Get them chocolate on the side. What's a recommendation for the book?
But a recommendation for the book, like a good Valentine's Day book for this age range.
Yeah.
There is a series called Mouse and Mole, by Herbert Wong Yee. And, there is a Valentine's Day one, that is fantastic. It's kind of the capper on the series, but it is fantastic.
Go
for the whole series, but definitely go for this book. It is great. Well written, well illustrated, fun, great, great Valentine's Day book.
There you go. Betsy Bird, the resident librarian here in the Download, also has another, she has a day job too.
Apparently.
Collection development manager at Evanston Public Library. We're talking about the readbrightlys.com, the 50 best books for 7 and 8 year olds tonight. Betsy, great to see you. And you got to come back and we much more to talk about.
All right. I will do it. Thank you.
Oak Park Natural Pet on Harlem, just north of Madison. Oak Park Natural Pet, where you always find more fish. I love that place.
Get more fish in your tank.
Get more fish in 99 cents, 21. Was Jason Skaggs, great. Yeah, I got to go back. I haven't been back since the in-store appearance this summer, which was great. And I'm trying to convince. I know this is a segment for another time, but I'm trying to convince. I'm trying to get a cat, or maybe a dog.
Yeah, you should.
But I feel like the problem I'm going to have is I got a show that's late. You know, this be 4 hours. When would I take the dog out? So that's what I got to figure out. So that's why a cat might be a better option.
After the show.
Yeah. But don't you have to take a dog out more than 4 hours? Like, I mean, we get here at like 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon.
I mean, we have two dogs, and I don't walk them at all during the week. So that's trouble. That's going to be trouble for your dog. See? So cat might be the...
Yeah. And start them young like a kitty, you know?
Yeah. Adopt one. Get Steve Dale in here. He can tell you all about them.
There you go. Now we're talking.
My cat claws me in the middle of the night, so that's something to look forward to.
What a great endorsement. That's great.
He's a lovable
Mark,
guy,
you're not
though.
A cat guy, huh?
No pets. I've got 4 kids, man.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Esmeralda, do you have any pets?
I have a cat who yowls at people and growls at them, oddly enough. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, get a cat.
You get the cat. Cat people are really convincing me here. All right. Well, maybe we can get a download cat. What if we had a dog in the studio?
Yes. Right?
Just get one that fits in a purse.
Well, Kelly Hogan was talking about the hideout had a dog, like a golden retriever back in the day, that would just hang out at the bar. And I know this because that's what we bonded in the interview, because I remember being on stage in 1999 in a sparsely attended show at the hideout, and in the middle of like our comedy routine, the dog just got up on stage. And it was like, wow, we just got upstaged by a dog. That was maybe we should stop doing this.
You do still have to walk it if it's here.
Yeah, but
we're here though, so we could do that. We could foster one for a while, see how it goes.
I think a studio dog, we're getting somewhere. We just have to get every host on board. Because a dog could never leave here. We have to go home. But then, like, Patty would have to take care of the dog. And then Nick would have to take care of the dog. And then Cochran.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, right. We'd have to have a full buy-in on a studio dog. Full buy-in. Like, Bill and Wendy, full buy-in.
How great that would be.
How great. Talk about bringing the station together. Martyr would have to take a shift. Esmeralda would have to take a shift.
No way.
See, we can't even get through our own team.
We can barely take care of the damn fish that's up here in the newsroom.
Hamster. How about a WGN radio hamster?
That could work too. But that's not as fun. I want to hear the dog barks when someone sneaks in the studio, right? Or someone's fooling around on the glass here. We just send the dog out to take care of it. I think we're on to something, you guys. Martyr, it's up to you, buddy.
I'm out.
We were so close. If we had our team was unified, then we would move on to the next team, but we're already having divisions internally. It's just a character flaw. I got a character flaw. There it is, a little theme song for Character Flaws. It's Wednesday night here on The Download, so that does mean it's Character Flaw time. We've decided that we'd like to honor some of the great performers, writers, and comedians that are here in this town. It is amazing how much talent is available in Chicago and to this show. So starting this month, essentially, this is only like the second or third time we've done it. We're going to use Wednesday nights at 10 o'clock for a new segment we're calling Character Flaws. In it, we'll bring sketch comedy characters, of course, improv. It's going to be a fun ride, so sit back and enjoy. Tonight, great performers. Abby McEnany is part of us tonight. Sandy Marshall is here in studio. That's great, and we'll have much, much more. It's going to be a great time, so, you know, why don't we want to get right to it? You know, it's interesting on the show because, you know, I hosted solo, and there have been times where we have had co-hosts. We've tried out some co-hosts. Early on, we had a couple. She didn't really work out. Laura, She didn't work out, but so I want to try some other people because I don't think that we, you know, should just stop because one person didn't work out, right? I think that's probably the idea. So I'd like to introduce tonight another great co-host who is auditioning for the roller coaster. Amazing job co-hosting all over AM radio in his life. He used to have a stint at Don Imus. He was a guy on Imus. He was a longtime voice of Fresno News and Talk. Fresno, California. Great. And also the Carolina Talk Network. He's a big part of that. Bob Bung. Bung is a great, he's an amazing, he's an amazing co-host. And he's good to have a man with such a caliber on the show.
Good to be here, Justin. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, today was a big day, Bob, because, the president came back. Right. He came to Springfield to talk in front of the legislation. Yep. It was huge to have him there.
A lot to say there.
And, you know, and it was interesting because he talked about civility.
Yeah.
And that was a big part of what, you know, I think everybody wants to hear, especially what's happening with Rauner and Madigan.
Right. Well, he had a point to make.
And I think that that's what, you know, we want to see from our leaders.
We do.
We don't want to see this, you know, this what he, you know, like the idea that there's just a stalemate.
Right. Right,
all the time.
Right. Nobody's doing anything.
That's right. No one's doing anything. We want to make sure that our politicians are doing stuff, especially when there's so many lives on the line.
They need more action.
That's right. So, I mean, I think that, you know, what we saw today, I mean, that's the kind of thing that we hope to see more from our political leaders as we move forward.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. So,
I agree.
So what do you think, Bob?
Yeah, I think there's both sides to that. It's two sides to every story. whatever you think.
Okay, well, I mean, it's this kind of show where, you know, you can have your own opinion. You don't have to just, you know, you have to and everything, you know, or laugh. You can come up with your own opinions.
A lot of opinions and a lot of topics. A lot of people hold those opinions close to the vest. Some share them with everybody. So
okay, well, this would be the time, you know, since you're auditioning, this would be the time where you might want to just give a little bit more of your opinion.
About my opinion. Well, it's whatever you think, Justin. You're the man. So,
okay. No, I'm saying that, you know, to be part of the show, you got to come up with your own opinion. You can't just pump it back. So just give us something. Give the audience something that they could find out about Bob Bung.
My favorite color is blue.
Okay, it's got to be more than that, Bob. It's got to be more than that.
More than that. I am 41 years old.
There you go. Okay, we're getting somewhere. That's still not enough. Push a little bit further,
bit more,
Bob.
Bit more.
Who are you, Bob? Bob Bung, who are you?
A bit more detail. My wife left me.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a car.
Okay.
I'm camping at a McDonald's parking lot in Elgin through March.
Okay.
It gets very cold.
So. Yeah.
You didn't want to go there. You kind of pulled it out of me and trying to be agreeable, but... what do you think, Justin? What's your take on everything? What's happening in Springfield?
Well, I think that we know where that smell came from.
Yeah, but what does that mean? I mean, just dig a bit deeper. What listeners want to know what that means.
Yeah, Bob Bung downloads co-host who's auditioning to be co-host.
This is where you wrap it up, though. A bit more about you, though.
No, they know about me. I think they need to know about you.
But do they? Let's go a bit deeper.
I mean, I didn't know we would know that you're sleeping in your car, and it just seems kind of weird now.
Yeah, my kids now call me Bruce, which is the name of their stepdad, so they can't tell me and the stepdad apart. Mm-hmm. So,
Bob Bung, ladies and gentlemen.
My name's not Bruce. It's Bob.
Oh.
Bob Bung.
It almost worked. Sorry, Bob. All right, we come back. I got to get my car fixed, man. Something's wrong with my car, so we'll have the Downloads Auto Mechanic in studio. Stay with us. Love this track. That's our guy. I forgot his name right now, but I love that guy. Oh, yeah, Skylar Spence. We had him on before Lollapalooza. Great track. Great track. Hey, it's Character Flaws here on WGN Radio. Giving you some sketch improv, some characters, performance from the buddies of the show, The Download, and the Chicago comedy community. Coming up, we're going to hear from Abby McEnany. Abby's great. She'll be coming up. I'm bringing my car. Unfortunately, I'm having trouble with the car, so I will introduce you to The Download's new auto mechanic. And find out why. I brought my car in just to get a brake light fixed, and I'm having trouble. Now it just won't even start. So I hate when that happens, right? But it's my fault. I might have chose the wrong mechanic, right? But as before we get to that, I'm very excited because I do, you know, I mentioned improv all the time on the show, but we don't really do improv, as people probably know it at home. You know, we have, you know, we heard Dave Rozowski and Tim O'Malley were on the show earlier, and they talk about improv, or I always say, you know, can we do this? Can we do that? You know, it. What we essentially do all the time is just have characters on and we, you know, improvise. But tonight, I'm very excited because we're going to try some improv in studio. And this is very exciting because it's not just normal improv, it's Australian improv. It's a whole different thing. It's a very, it's sort of like craft beer, you know, with improv. Like you'll have your mainstream Bud Light and your Miller Lite kind of stuff that you can get here in Chicago. But there's all sorts of different scenes all over the world that bring a different take on improv. So I'm very excited to have an Australian improviser in studio tonight. Rory McShane, he's a tremendous improviser. And I don't know much about their form, but we're going to get to it. 312-981-7200, because we're going to need a suggestion. 312-981-7200. Rory McShane, nice to meet you. Welcome to Character Flaw.
Justin, great to be here. Thanks so much for having me on the download.
All right.
Rory McShane from the group Juxtaposition from Sydney, Australia. We're Australia's number one improv group. Let me hear you at the download. WGM Radio Chicago. Great to be here.
All right. So, like I said, you're going to do improv. You know, you say you're with the group Juxtaposition, but it's just you. So that's kind of, that's the first thing I would question. Like, why is just one person in an improv group?
Right, yeah, it was 2016. Our travel budget was cut a bit. So I'm kind of making a regional tour, spread the love around Juxtaposition. And what we do is we basically juxtapose two things in an improvised format. We take a regular location and we juxtapose it with a crazy thing, like a crazy animal from the zoo or a crazy exotic type of fruit.
Okay, well, that's the concept. So, all right, 312-981-7200. Rory McShane is going to do some Australian improv, the group Juxtaposition. What do you need from us, Rory?
I need a suggestion. So, like, I need a suggestion with an idea that's going to get the improv started, the magic's going to happen. So, right, what I need is, like, a regular location, okay. Like a regular place that you would go to just regular hang
out. Pete, why don't you take that one? Pete, what's a regular location that you would just hang out?
Like a coffee shop?
A coffee shop.
Oh, a coffee shop. That's great. That's great. A regular location. Everybody goes there to hang out, have a coffee, get on Wi-Fi. Now, if I could just get a suggestion of a crazy animal from the zoo.
Pete, you want to change it? Crazy animal from the zoo.
Crazy animal. I'm going to... A giraffe.
A giraffe. Oh, that's a great... What a crazy animal. Can you imagine a crazy animal like a giraffe in a coffee shop? Let's take a look at it. Oh, it's a crazy animal like a giraffe. In a coffee shop, let's take a look. And that's how the whole thing plays out.
You know, so that's it?
That's it. We get the suggestion, set it up, and move on to another suggestion. So we could, let's get another regular location, like a place you might shop, like a place you might go buy something, like another regular location.
Pete, do you have another regular location?
Target?
A Target's a great regular location. Millions of people go to Target every year to buy everything from household to electronics to maternity clothing. So now, we've got a regular location like a Target. Now let's get an exotic type of fruit that you couldn't buy in a regular type of grocery store. A real exotic type of fruit.
Pete, what do you think?
How about a kiwi?
A kiwi,
that's a great one. That's also local if you're from Australia. So let's take a Target, and what happens when a kiwi walks into a Target?
What happens?
That's it. There we go. Let's get one more. We got time for one more regular location. We can just get a regular location, like somewhere you would go.
I'll take this
maybe up. With your friend.
All right, let's say... All right, airport.
An airport's a great regular location. Millions of people go to the airport. They fly. They go see friends, family, go on a business trip at the airport. Now let's get a real weird show. Let's get a favorite type of female underwear.
Female underwear?
Female underwear.
Favorite type.
Favorite type. That's right.
What do you
bra, panties, is it swimsuit, you know, sort of set up underwear. What's a favorite type of underwear?
A girdle?
A girdle. That's right now. Imagine what would happen if a girdle walked into an airport. That's juxtaposition. That's right. I'm Rory McShrain, Sydney, Australia's greatest improv maestro. We get a suggestion of a regular location. We juxtapose it with something crazy, and then the magic happens.
That's amazing. Hey. You were asking for improv on the show. You just got it. Rory, where can we see you're going to be at the Chicago Improv Festival coming up?
I'm going to be at the Chicago Improv Festival every single night. Catch me. I think it's this year from March 14th all the way to March 31st. Check it out. It's a full 3 weeks we're there. We're also going to be in residence all the way through the summer, making our rounds from Illinois down to Missouri, special parts of Louisiana. Don't forget to check us out. And then if we can get the fare back, we'll be headed home for a big tour around Australia this fall. Don't want to take too much more of your time, but again, it's juxtaposition.au.
I'm Rob Martier on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Rob, that was great newscast.
Thank you.
I felt like that was one of your better ones.
Oh, I try. Support.
The story you did about the emissions tests.
Yes.
The idea that they're not going to send out the notices.
Right. Yeah.
Seems like there's a lot more to that story.
No. I mean, you know, the state's still without a budget. They're going to stop sending out the notices for those who have plates that expire at the end of March, so no notices. But you can still go get your vehicle checked out.
Yeah. It just seems like it's the kind of thing that there's more than meets the eye.
No, this story's pretty cut and dry. Hmm. Yeah, no notices.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It seems like it's one of those stories that's ripe for long form, which is where we take one story that's really just a headline and turn it into a 2-hour documentary. What do you think about emissions? What does that word mean? Is it the gas? Is it the exhaust? Are we exhausted as a people? Some might say we are. That's why this is a story that you want to listen to. What do you think about driving? Where are we going? Do we wonder about what's in our future? What's in our past? Here's where the story gets interesting. 14-year-old Manny. He's just a boy, just like anybody else. Gets up in the morning, goes to school, plays soccer, eats a sandwich, cuts off the crust, peanut butter and jelly, the standard. But the different thing about Manny is he has no torso. He's just arms and legs. And when you think about having no torso, makes you think about the word emission, because what are you giving off if you're just arms and legs? We caught up with Manny, went to his house. Manny, let me ask you, what's it like to live with just arms and legs?
Hello, my name is Manny, and I don't have a torso.
Tonight, Act One, Mission Emission. What does it mean to not get that letter from the state? That letter that reminds you, that makes you feel whole, makes you feel like community. Act Two, License to Thrive. Forget drive. What's it take to thrive? And Act Three, what happened on 9/11? All right, there you go. There you go. So you can catch that Emission documentary we're going to cut in here. It's on for the next 4 hours on WGN Plus. Just check it out. Just straight up. They're actually going to make it. They're going to do season two where they go back. And they keep going back. Season two, season three, season four.
It's an ongoing story.
Oh, my Lord. That's fun. It's fun to do. It's fun to do. You got to check it out. We should definitely put that podcast together. Long form. That's Pete's favorite podcast. It's Character Flaws here on WGN Radio. Coming up, I have got a problem with my mechanic. And it might be me because I went to a very specialized mechanic. And that's, you know, Sandy, you know what going to mechanic. Yeah. I'm sure Canadian mechanics are weird.
They're totally weird. Everything leads to, let's put some maple syrup in the carburetor and I can't do that. You know?
So we'll talk with the Downloads car auto mechanic and find out what's wrong with my car after the break. Stay with us. It's Character Flaws here on WGN Radio. I'm not looking forward tonight because I got to walk home because my car's back in the shop. The Downloads car is back in the shop, which is a bummer. I brought it in to replace a brake light, and then I got it back, and it just died. And I think it's my fault because I didn't take it to my usual mechanic. I took it to a new mechanic, a holistic mechanic on the north side, which I don't know. I just thought that was a new thing. I read something in Simple Living. I was into it, so I wanted to figure out what's wrong with the car, but I also think I want to introduce this concept to the masses. So my guest tonight, the Downloads Holistic Auto Mechanic. Hi.
Hi. It's good, so nice to see you.
Good to see you, too. So as I said, I mean, I brought the car in to get a brake light fixed, yeah. and then it's not even running anymore.
Right.
So what's going on?
I wasn't able to really fix that.
Okay. That's what I'm trying to get to the bottom of.
Well, okay. So holistic mechanicry.
I don't even think that's a word. But
well, it is now. It's more about we do a lot of yoga. We do some stretches. You'd think your car wouldn't be able to stretch, but it can. I kick the tires a little bit. They kick back. They want to. You know, and then I touch it. I do a little Reiki. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of chakras in a car, more than a human being. I think they're anywhere between 2 and 15 a human being, and I'd say they're upward of 2 grand.
2,000
chakras on a car, depending on how many doors.
If
it's a
sedan,
I don't know. Can't count that high.
Okay, well.
But a mini, about 922 chakras.
Wow.
And I touch every one. That's why it took so long. And then we did some Korean massages. You know, lots of scrubs. Have you ever been to a Korean massage?
I have not.
Seriously, it'll change your life. It's terrifying. You get naked, and these women come out and scrub the living daylights out of you. So I did that to the car, but more of a gentle touch.
Okay.
I mean, look at these mitts. They might not look gentle, but they can be. Some facials, you know, some rub-a-dub-dub facials. Again, that's what I call it.
I call them
rub-a-dub-dub facials. Most importantly, we did group therapy. We got all the cars together. And we all talked about our feelings. I lead it with a djembe. So, I get all the cars in the garage together. And I don't sit in the center because I'm not the leader. I'm a member. But I do some interstitial djembe drumming.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems the cars talk?
Absolutely do.
So what's wrong with my car?
Very depressed. It's feeling taken advantage of.
Again, what?
Yeah, you never ask how it's feeling. You get mad at it when you have your road rage incidents. You smack on the steering wheel and on that thing. What's that thing called? I'm not really a driver. A dashboard.
You hit
the dashboard. I never got my license. Not important.
I just came in for a brake light, and all I need the car to do is work.
Well, you know, it would work if you treated it better as a being. As opposed to a vehicle.
A vehicle, which is what it is.
Well, you chose a holistic mechanicry place for your...
And so, I'm wondering why I did that.
Well, you know, it's nice to see you finally take some responsibility.
For what?
By the choices you make. Did you see the dog bed I put in back?
I did. I'm not sure. I don't have a dog. So
that's another life change that your car wants you to make, so...
My car... Wants me to get a dog.
And not like a crappy little yippy dog. Something like a lab or the little dog I like is a corgi. Corgis are cute. You know, my granny had one. It was the only nice thing about my granny. She called me stupid in third grade because I couldn't tell time. The dog's name was Powie. Real cute. Little fat. That's okay. You know, it's the only fat thing in our family that my granny liked. That was tough. But Powie...
All right. Yeah, it took a week and a half, which I think was a little bit too much for me to just.
Well, we did get you a little loaner venture card, So you were able to get around
right,
on the
but
CTA.
There was no money on it, so I had to put my own money on it.
Well,
that's it.
You know, you save $5 because we gave you the card.
Yeah, I guess.
Because you know what, like, actually, you know, when tourists come here, they have to spend $5.
No, I get that, but I have a venture card, so I didn't really need...
Well, you could have told us that. I give you a five note. You came in for a brake light. That's actually, like, very dangerous.
Yeah,
you
know? I know,
like,
right?
Lives are, you know, in jeopardy.
I don't know if they're in jeopardy. It's just
well,
a
I
nuisance.
Mean, so, okay. Yeah, well. So not only was the brake light down, but... But also, more importantly, your car's just not feeling well.
What do you mean?
There's a lot going on with it and dealing with a lot of things in your car's life. Number one, you've never named it. So there's an identity issue. They don't know how to feel about themselves.
It's a car. I mean, you don't name your car.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's again, so I'm not, again, not pointing fingers, but that is on you, Justin. So I guess I did point a finger. But so that the car, lots of feelings. There's an initial identity crisis, which I believe you know, that you were very defensive of. I think a lot of things, I don't know, have you ever been in therapy, Justin? I can't tell because you go in and you're trying not to be defensive. And you got a lot of work.
You learned this all from my car.
Oh, no. I mean, I came in with, you know, years of therapy myself, and there are little things I've learned. Very little. That's why I still go. I'm a lifer. I can't help it. We're not here to talk about me. We're talking about your car.
Well, I just...
In the holistic mechanicry business, we treat it as a whole issue. You know, not just a brake light, the whole car.
I didn't want to make a big deal about this, and
well,
I probably shouldn't,
too
but
little, too late,
I'm going to take the car somewhere else. I don't know.
I mean, that's... Yeah,
I don't believe in holistic mechanicry. I think it's made up. I think you're making it up. I feel like this is kind of a ruse.
You got me.
I did?
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's a ruse. Basically, I got into the mechanicry business. It's not a word yet, Justin, but I am working on it. Just like I'm trying to bring in Wise Up back. I got in basically for the fashion. You know,
what do you mean the fashion?
Yeah, I mean, to see, you know, a butch woman like me, like, it gets butched up a little bit more with those overalls. Is that what they're called?
The coveralls. Yeah,
yeah. Again, yeah, the coveralls. So, again, not very butch, call them outfits, but that's what I do. And I got to say, I'm cleaning up.
Really?
Yeah.
The coveralls work?
Oh, yeah. I've gotten a free ride on a CTA. I have gotten a donut from Stan's.
That's nice.
It was weird. It wasn't at Stan's. I was actually walking down a street.
And someone just handed you a stand?
Yeah, somewhere? It was weird. And, you know, it's actually I was in Indiana. So it doesn't really make sense, but I got a free Stan's donut.
Huh.
And still delicious. And also, I've gotten Miller Lights. I was going to say more than a girl could want, but there is no limit.
Okay. If I bring the car back, could you just fix what's wrong and the brake light and maybe skip the group therapy and then we'll call it a day?
See, I could probably skip the group therapy, but I probably couldn't fix what's wrong because I know nothing about cars.
It's Download's auto mechanic who specializes in holistic mechanicry.
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 Bye, Justin.
I somehow have to get my car fixed now.
Well, you know, I don't know. I know a guy who knows a guy.
Oh, the Download's auto mechanic, also known by the name Abby McEnany, who is an improviser in Chicago. You can see her at Second City. She plays on Wednesday night. She does the game show stuff on Wednesday. She also she's all over the place. She's been so many different things. But she's Abby McEnany. You can find her all over the place.
Yeah. Right? She's
I'm trying to think, like, because she told me where she's doing shows. I asked her, and she's like, Monday I've got this, Tuesday I've got, like, it's like all improvisers in Chicago. They're busy.
Yeah.
But Abby's great. She's amazing, and she'll be on the show. She'll be in Character Flaws as well. Coming up next week, I'm excited to say Improv Shakespeare will be here. TJ Shanoff will be with us.
Cool.
Susan Messing and Rachel Mason will return. Kate James from Schadenfreude. So many more people that are... that are actually listening to this and saying, I want to be a part of it, and they want to get involved in some of the shenanigans that Sandy and I have been that we have brought to the WGN radio.
Well, it's a ton
tonight.
Of fun. It's really a lot of fun, and it's also fun, honestly, seeing some of the comments come in.
Most, it's really funny. I think we've done a good job, Pete, of creating context, because that was something that we really want to do with the Character Flaws, is we want to create context so people know that they're comedy bits.
Mm-hmm.
It's fake, it's improv, we're having fun, we're, you know, Abby's not a real holistic mechanic. But it is true, Sandy's seeing some of the texts that come in where people are like, tell me that was fake. Tell me that's not real. I'm like, no, I told you it's not. I mean, it's, you know, and we used to have problems because we'd play like Colleen Henneman, the drunk Cubs fan, mm-hmm. maybe in the 7:30, and we wouldn't set it up that it was a comedy bit. We'd kind of pull the wool over the eyes, sort of, you know, mm-hmm. Andy Kaufman style. We're like, this is real. And, you know, that when I had people that I knew and loved and respected and knew so much about comedy going, is that real? I'm like, I might be, we might be a little too close to the line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's mm-hmm. like, so I feel like this is a good compromise. But it is true. Yeah. Like I've had five different texts have come in saying, you need a mechanic? I got a guy for you. Oh, great mechanic over on Milwaukee Avenue. All right. No. I don't need one. It's a car's not actually broken. So
there, let's get him on air. Maybe he can beat everybody else's prices.
You know, this is true. That is true.
Who knows?
Speaking of auto mechanicry,
yeah,
we're taking the download to the auto show next Friday.
Great.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's so fun.
It's the final night of the auto show. We'll be live 7 to 10 from McCormick Place. And we're going to have a great show. Steve Gadlin, who does the frying pan, is going to come with us.
Great.
And he's going to do it live there in front of the audience. And also he told me that he has an idea for cars.
Great.
So he does the frying pan. That's where he comes up with the inventions. We take calls yay or nay. It's usually on Friday nights. Mm-hmm. And this is a Friday night. So he's going to come with, and he's going to do one that's specifically for cars so we can judge whether yes or no at the car show.
Great.
Isn't that cool?
Yes.
I have to say, you know, I'm really happy about this because of all the years I've been in Chicago, I've never been to the car show.
Can't believe that.
I've been to the boat show.
Call yourself a Chicagoan.
Yeah, right.
I've not been to the auto show.
I know. I've been to...
You could find it.
I've been to C2E2. I've been to other McCormick Place show. I've been to the, like I said, the boat and RV show.
Mm-hmm.
Classic. If you like it, if you want a speedboat.
Where do you go?
To the boat and RV show.
The boat show.
You're right. The boat show, that's right. So that's coming up on the 19th, right? February 19th?
Yep.
And then, mm-hmm. this is fun, man. This is where it starts to get fun, as the weather hopefully will cooperate, but it's all inside, so who cares? On the 23rd, which is a Tuesday, we're going to be live at Pequod's.
Cool.
Pequod's Pizza up on Clybourne.
Yeah, can't
wait.
How
cool is that, right?
That's super cool.
Yeah, and we're going to do that. And so we got some tricks up our sleeves as we continue. We will not be on tomorrow night. The Blackhawks are playing tomorrow night, but we will be back on Friday. Jamie Calvin from the Invisible Institute. They got a huge grant. The Knight Foundation gave him money for their work that they do at the Invisible Institute. But he's also the man who broke the Laquan McDonald story. Mm-hmm. He's the one who forced the police. He put the lawsuit in to say, we need to see this video. So we'll talk with him coming up. He's my guest at the big table on Friday night. All right, Patty Vasquez coming up next. That's going to do it tonight. Thanks to Pete Zimmerman. Thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to all our guests. Kelly Hogan. She's going to be at the Hideout on Valentine's Day for the big review. And a texter called in and said that she's not raising money for diabetes, raising money to fight diabetes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I know that was confusing a ton of people out there. And I felt like maybe I was raising money for... Kelly's raising money to make that a bigger disease.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah,
they're fighting the disease. I was called out. I want to make it clear that that's.
Well, I think people are getting a little picky.
Yeah, well, maybe, but you know, I mean, they're right. I need to say fighting the disease, not so because maybe you're a big fan of diabetes, and you show up and you're like, I got my 20s. And you're like, oh, this is the fight diabetes. What a tricked. Tricked by the download. So you never know. You never know, Rob.